Listen to them. Children of the night. What music they make.
Oh my God, it's a brand new episode of
a podcast.
Terror Incognita. That's the name you're looking for.
This week, we got somebody special on the cast. We got Ernie.
Hello.
Personal, close friend. Well, close friend of Sam's. Personal friend of all of us. Hello. But
he's close so friend special. Of Sam's.
From Joystick Maverick.
What's up?
Good intro.
I like
good
it.
Intro. You fit in perfectly.
As long as he doesn't say, your boy.
Yeah, that's mine.
That's taken.
Bing bong.
We're about to get sued by TikTok.
Yeah. Not the state of New York, but TikTok itself.
Also, I feel like Bing bong was kind of becoming my thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's the rules with cursing on this show?
All the cursing.
Yeah.
Cool. Fuck your life.
There you go. Welcome. Ernie, why don't you tell the listeners where they can find Joystick Maverick, where what it's about, what you guys do.
Awesome. Hey, everybody, it's Big Ern.
Oh, my God, dude, he sounds like a radio person.
I know, it sounds weird. I'm Ernie. My co-host is Dom, and I'm one of the wonderful people that do Joystick Maverick.
Ooh.
The first half, we talk about games. The last half, we talk about, that's right, Maverick, Tom Cruise. No, I'm just kidding. We talk about video games, we talk about movies, we talk about TV shows, anything that's got a fandom. If
nerd
you
shit.
Like it, we like it. Nerdcore.
Nerdcore.
Yeah, show up, be disappointed, and tell your friends.
Yeah.
Show up and be disappointed. I feel like that should be your tagline. Or our tagline.
Listen, I'm married, but I tricked my wife. Okay, thank you.
So whenever we talk to, which has really only been one other time, but whenever we talk to anybody else that does a podcast on our podcast, we ask you... I can't tell if you're crying because you're on the cast or if you're...
No, I've never introduced myself before.
That was really good. You did a really
good job. It's like doing
job.
An annual review. Like, I'm great at what... I did my job.
I think you did a really good
money.
Job.
Sounds like you just wrote one of those.
Yeah, I did. It was terrible.
That was good.
So if our listeners were going to go check out your podcast, what episodes would you recommend?
Ooh, good
episode
question.
20 was a great one. I'd say that because it was probably the biggest listened to episode. We had a special guest, super cool, not spelled in an unusual way. He has a nickname, Soup, also not spelled in an unusual way.
S-O-O-P, right?
Yeah, S-O-O-P. But the reason it was so unique is because he is he's very influential in just the world he's in. He actually has a small community of people that he works with, and he makes different, like, he's more of a composer when it comes down to it. He plays actual, you know, physical musical equipment. He plays in a symphony, but he also helps people.
As most composers do.
Right. But he also makes, like, intros for different shows, or if you want to do it like an alert sound for somebody coming in on a show, like, oh, suddenly I came into the stream, and all of a sudden it'd be like,
bing bong, bing bong.
Yeah, exactly. Fanfare. Right. F your life. Like, it'd be like, that would show up, but he would do like a fanfare version of that. But he also is very, he takes his craft very seriously. And I say that because I tried to crack a joke at the beginning of it. He was like, what kind of music do you like to listen to? And I was like, the ones in my ears here. And he's like, no, I mean, like,
actually,
music you work to or music you code to? And I was like, oh, you were being serious. I'm sorry. I'm just the host of the show.
No
really,
disrespect.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make funny things.
Yeah, exactly. And but no, episode 20 is definitely was our bigger one. But please feel free to start at the beginning, hear how shitty it was early on, and jump back into the 20s because we got a little bit better. But we've got so many different people that come on the show. Sam is one of them. Game developer Hayo Sean, Justin Mitchell, aka Griffin Blade. Yeah, Griffin Blade 77 or whatever.
He's amassed a pretty good little following.
Yeah, he's been grinding, man. He's on Twitch like 3 or 4 times a week.
What does he do? Who's this person?
Justin.
Justin.
Oh, Justin. Oh, shit.
Yeah. And the show is Sean.
Sean. You know Sean.
Gertie's?
No, other Sean.
Oh, other Sean. Yep. School Sean.
Yeah.
The one with the hybrid baby. He's got ginger hair and Asian.
Yeah. His wife has red hair, right? Yeah. I remember, yeah.
Yeah, he's the perfect hybrid. home, he's a cute shit kid. I will vote for him for president. But no, my point is, we've got all these special guests coming on. I've been asking, and I'm going to ask you now. Mm-hmm. Alex, please be on the show.
No.
Come on.
No.
Come on.
You'd have to convince her to play some video game. We talk about video games, her eyes actually start to glaze over.
What?
She takes out her phone.
I'll tell you what, we'll skip the first half. We'll just be Maverick for that show.
I get drunk enough, I feel like I can come in with the questions that people who don't like video games.
Yeah,
like,
that's actually a good point.
What are the pictures like?
So I'll tell you what.
What are the goblins like?
The way you get Alex is the way you got me on that first episode. When you do like a horror theme. Because like the first time I was on the episodes with you guys was for American Horror Story 1984, right?
Yes.
That series?
That three-parter.
So you do something like that, Alex will pick it up.
I'll pick it up.
There's definitely a soon-to-be-coming-up episode 2023. I know it's coming up on this episode. We're going to talk about it. There was already a remaster of a particular game that came out recently. We're going to talk about it this episode. But my hope is that you guys would be special guests.
Five people, one podcast?
Yeah, it would almost be like
Brazzer
live
shit.
Show.
Why you got to be gross about it?
Yeah, we're not talking.
Why you got to be gross?
It's the internet,
you know,
Alex.
You know what? I don't know.
Just put Alex on the couch and all of us.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if this is the first time this word's been on this podcast, but I'm not talking about a Bukkake episode of my show.
That actually strangely,
I'm inviting all of you, and I'm hoping that partners will be there to keep things safe, okay?
He has a producer.
You bring security. I'll bring security.
After 150
the
episodes.
The fucked up part is that Palmer's my security.
I'm honestly not 100% sure.
I'm honestly more scared of Ben than most people. Less
real. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not 100% sure that's the first time that word's been on this podcast.
What?
Bukkake?
Yeah,
it
I'm pretty positive it's been said. I'm actually considering how much we managed to host a horror podcast. The amount we talk about sex.
I was just thinking specifically about Tom Six. As soon as you said that, Tom Six went into my head. I was like, I'm sure we talked about it before.
I'm sure it's come up
at some point. At some point.
But other than that, I would like to apologize to everybody listening to the episode. I will try to be funny. I don't know as much as they do, so please forgive me for any bad jokes that don't land.
Look, I don't know a lot either.
I think the people that listen to this podcast primarily at this point all know that none of us actually know anything about.
Well, no. The great thing is this is the first dive and foray into my long term plan to have a special episode where we replace the three of us with people that have never watched horror movies and let them talk about it.
Don't give away our secrets.
Yeah, that's gonna be something.
This is just like a whole. The next episode's gonna be a bunch of like 3-year-olds.
Yeah, we're gonna put children.
What did you think of the Halloween episode of Octonauts?
Monster Truck.
Monster Truck. Oh my God. My kid just too randomly screams, "What's that?"
Just raising the next generation of fucking degens.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you guys ready to talk about some news?
Dude, you know my answer.
What is it?
Your boy.
Oh my God. Oh my God, we're kicking stuff off. So we talked about Texas Chainsaw last week.
Yeah.
And we got this week.
Yeah, a lot more.
Oh my goodness gracious.
We got a lot more this week.
Apparently we got a trailer and some first look images of the cast for the upcoming, this was on Netflix, right?
Yep.
So this is the upcoming Netflix Texas Chainsaw Massacre take. We'll see how this all goes. The trailer premiered at Comic-Con. The cast includes Elsie Fisher from Castle Rock, Sarah Yarkin from Happy Death Day to You, which is a pretty good movie. Did you ever watch the second one yet?
I liked both of them.
Did you see the second one?
I did. Okay. It was good.
Mark Burnham from Wrong Cops is Leatherface. Actually, that's good casting. Well done.
Who is that?
Mark Burnham. Google him. You'll recognize
Google
who he is.
Him right now.
Mo Dunford from The Dig. Olwen Olwen something
Skip
as
and
House.
And others.
She was in Sally. Mandy. Okay. She was in Mandy.
She was in Mandy?
Yeah.
Was it the girlfriend?
No, that was Andrea
Rasbro.
I think
Wasn't that Andrea Rasbro?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
you guys are the Mandy fans.
No, I think she was just one of the crazy folks.
Alice Courage from Star Trek, mm-hmm. Jacob Lattimore from The Maze Runner, Neil Hudson from Victoria, Jessica Elaine from The Laundromat, Sam Douglas from Snatch, William Hope from Dark Shadows, and Jolyon Koi from War and Peace. The remake of War and Peace? Was there a remake of War and Peace?
I think so, yeah.
There was an original War and Peace?
I'm concerned which Dark Shadows.
I was literally just...
Dark Shadows or like the 60s Dark Shadows?
I imagine it's got to
be. So he's 66.
He's old. So
I think the original.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay.
Because I did the same thing.
Whatever vitamins he's taking.
Yeah.
He's Canadian. I just like to do that. Point out people are Canadian.
No, it was the remake. It was the remake. It was the remake? The 2012 one, yeah.
Okay, well, he's still Canadian, though. He's
Canadian.
Okay. Canadian.
We've also got a tagline and a full synopsis now. The tagline is, after nearly 50 years of hiding, Leatherface returns to terrorize a group of idealistic young friends who accidentally disrupt his carefully shielded world in a remote Texas town. So they're really ripping off Halloween.
Yeah. And this is very weird. Why does...
Well, sort of. Because Michael, in Halloween at least, Michael was in a asylum.
But why is Leatherface hiding? He doesn't even have the mental capacity to do such a thing. Like, why would he even give a shit about hiding?
Yeah.
And where is he hiding?
But I don't think that the lore for Leatherface is that he's like mentally handicapped in any way.
No, but
like,
he doesn't give a fuck though.
Anyways,
but the point is, like, this tagline could to be the same tagline from the original, right? Just after nearly enough.
After some time, after some time, the killer has returned.
But where was he hiding?
Well, so I don't know necessarily if like he was hiding or like the folks around the town like knew about him and just kept a wide berth.
Mm.
And like this group of people like break through the fucking
because like he wears people's skin and chases them with chainsaws. Like, where is he hiding?
In their skin.
Yeah.
Like, where is he hiding?
That's the reasonable conclusion to be drawn.
Like, where exactly is he hiding?
He's been hiding in the pages of Gotham.
Yeah, probably at this point. So the synopsis is that Melody, played by Sarah Yarkin, and her teenage sister Lila, played by Elsie Fisher, and their friends, Dante and Ruth, head to the remote town of Harlow, Texas to start an idealistic new business venture, but their dream soon turns into a walking nightmare when they accidentally disrupt the home of Leatherface, the deranged serial killer whose blood-soaked legacy continues to haunt the area.
So he was just kind of like hiding.
I feel like he was just kind of in his isolated place, and then like the town around him just kind of like existed knowing he was there, but they're like, if we stay away and just like give a wide berth, like he'll stay to his shit.
Like in Three from Hell, they kind of just like leave them alone.
Yeah. Like when
they're like, we don't go there.
When you're in a small town like that, I'm sure people are very willing to leave you alone.
Just turn a blind eye. Yeah.
If you live far out enough, like on the outskirts, they're just like, oh, that person's just
insane.
A bit touched.
Watch this end up being like Halloween Ends.
This is the most southern I've ever heard you in my whole life.
Watch this be like Halloween Ends, where Michael's just like still staring out his window 4 years later in his house, but the rest of Haddonfield is just kind of like, they've abandoned all the houses around Michael's house.
Yeah.
But it's the depressing rest of the town is totally the same. They're just like, we stay out of this ring.
Yeah.
I said that before. They would have knocked that house down a long time ago.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's very southern to like give people their space, and then mm-hmm. when you enter that space, you go, bless their heart.
Yeah.
Because they're
going to
die.
Yeah. Apparently, we're getting a game too, coming from Gun Interactive, who unveiled at the 2021 Game Awards a nice little trailer. Oh, shit. This premiered at the Game Awards?
Yay, boy.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's an interesting inclusion for the Game Awards. I feel like that's not quite the target audience, but that's awesome that they managed to get there. I mean, I guess
it's a lot of AAA. Game, but it's like, a lot of AAA stuff.
Yeah.
And, okay.
There was a lot of actually that whole AAA or Game Awards last night was a lot of like horror centric.
Was it really?
I did see
a new Space Marines trailer.
Yeah,
Ernie is here to tell us these things.
No Lie, No Die. It was like a 3-hour marathon of like the cool stuff up front, the cool stuff in the back, and then like weird songs in the middle.
Yeah,
but like 40% was like kind of spooky dooky, and I was like, yeah, this is
gonna be
cool. Make comments all about right. all three of you. Like, we got it.
I limited the gaming section to this, which is out of the gaming section, but then the other big one, but like. Bloody Disgusting's front page today. was talking about Game Awards. Literally just like 9 straight articles about the horror games coming out.
Okay.
All right.
Super dope.
Cool.
All right. Gun Interactive obviously did Friday the 13th, the game. The company is now teaming up with Sumo Nottingham to bring Leatherface's Rampaging Insanity to PC and current-gen consoles. Based on Tobe Hooper's original film, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it'll also deliver the same multiplayer experience that's Friday the 13th, the game first did in 2017. I hope it's not the same because that was riddled with glitches and a lot of problems.
They figured it out.
Yeah, I'm hoping it took 20 patches and then them not being able to ever finish the game because the lawsuit started.
I mean, that still puts them ahead of CD Projekt Red and Amazon Games right now.
Amazon Games, yes.
It's a low bar for Amazon, though.
I will continue to defend Cyberpunk. Moving on.
Because of Keanu?
No, because I actually think it's a good game.
It is if it works, yeah.
All
right. He said moving on.
Everybody's entitled to an opinion.
I say good day.
Do you want to mute yourself while you fix that shit and I can take this next one?
I can't fix it. It's broken plastic. We're holding the mic for the rest of the podcast.
Oh, yep. No. Ooh, just pause it for a second. We'll figure something out.
Pause
it.
There's no
to those listening, figuring that there's out. Palmer's committed. Microphone holder.
Palmer's committed.
Yeah. We'll get through the first half at least.
Okay.
What's the name of the guy that does the intro for most boxing? Weighing in at 37 pounds and time
Buffer.
For bed.
There it is. Yeah. Bruce Buffer.
Yeah.
Just be careful. Don't say his tagline or he's going to sue the shit out of us.
Let's get ready for bed.
There you go. Perfect.
So we can sing all of Whitney Houston, but we can't say this guy's tagline?
I'm not even kidding. That motherfucker sues people like Ferrari sues companies.
Would that not be good for us, maybe?
I don't want to lose my house and both of your houses.
Oh, I'll dance with somebody.
Like, can you take a picture of him, though? Because he looks ridiculous while he's talking.
Yeah. We'll post this up on Twitter.
Yeah, here we go.
We'll this is our Twitter. Commitment.
I'll put it on Reddit.
At least one of us can.
Right? Here's our commitment to Sparkle Motion.
Maybe RVA will like it if he posts it.
I can't wait to get banned.
Yeah. They're going to be like, that guy took a picture of him.
Oh, he was in his house.
Banned.
Next up, we've got some Halloween stuff. The Steelbook and Director's Cut information is finally here. Halloween Kills is coming to physical media January 11th, and the digital release is going to be on December 13th. 3 days.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, something like that. In the form of a brand new extended cut, which we have talked about previously on the podcast. The extended cut will come to 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray and DVD on January 11th, 2022, and it will include the 4K UHD Blu-ray and digital copy of Halloween Kills, 2 versions of the movie, the theatrical and the extended with the alternate ending, the gag reel, deleted and extended scenes, Haddonfield's Open Wounds, which I'm sure is some sort of featurette.
Good name.
The Kill Team, Strode Family Values.
I love that. That's my favorite feature name.
That's pretty good. 1978 Transformations, The Power of Fear, Kill Count, which, God, I please do not get the guy from fucking Dead Meat to host that. I'm just, anyways, moving on. Feature we commentary. Hate
him. That tasted like salt.
With it might have, but it's fake. Featuring commentary with director and co-writer David Gordon Green and stars Jamie Lee Curtis and Judy Greer.
I think they did a good job with the featurette names.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Strode Family Values just fucking got me as soon as I saw it. I was like, this is brilliant.
I like the Kill Team too. I think that sounds good.
The final bit Sam has here is that the scariest Real Housewife has officially signed on for the next film. Variety notes that sources are telling it that Kyle Richards garnered positive reception from fans in Halloween Kills, and the filmmakers rewrote the script to include her apparently in Halloween Ends, crafting an expanded storyline for her return.
She was a much better actress than I expected her to be. And she So she was the one with the long brown hair.
She was the one at the playground that survived.
Yes.
And she was the only one out of the
in the car.
That was which Real Housewife is she?
She was on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
And she was the only one who was nurse.
You know this?
Yeah, she makes it under the bridge.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Remember
this.
when they find her from
the original movie.
Yeah.
Well, I knew, but I didn't realize that she was a
Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
So I didn't know that until Mary Beth told me, and I was like, okay, so that's the only reason I have the scariest Real Housewife note, because otherwise I wouldn't fucking know.
No, but she also. But you're right though when you say that she garnered like good reception. She was
really good.
A better in that than I thought she was going to be. Yeah, when I saw her, I was like, oh, she's going to be terrible.
But see, from my perspective, I was just like, oh, yeah, she was in the OG one. That's fine. Yeah. Like,
and
then, like, cool.
That's how I knew her, too. And then Mary Beth was like, oh, that's Kyle Richards. That's the Real Housewife of Beverly Hills.
So she told me, like, the
whole backstory, like, I gave a shit about it.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
So, I was in the original boat, and at the same time, I was like, yeah, I'm so angry at her because she's doing such a good job.
Right? Right.
That's how I've been picked. Yep. If I hate you, your character, and like the next movie you're in, I'm like, I'm not watching that because I hate you now.
Yeah.
Your character was so good in the last movie, I'm going to watch that.
Yeah. She did do a good job.
It's like
I didn't want her to.
It's why I don't watch Wheel of Time right now, because I hated that chick from Gone Girl. I'm like, God, you suck. You suck so bad.
My wife is very upset with that show. Very upset with that show. Like, she read all of the books for Wheel of Time.
Yeah,
she's read all of them. She, like, grew up reading them. She reread, like, the first couple, I think, in anticipation for the show.
Oh, she's pissed.
And she, like, she came in after watching, like, the first episode to the bedroom. She was just like, I fucking hate what Amazon is doing with the show.
Ernie agrees.
I can't believe it.
I'm not mad at the actress again. She did a great job, but
sometimes it's what, like, King Joffrey. I ever see him in anything else, I'm just gonna be like, piece of shit.
He stopped acting.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
because he was too good in the role. Mm-hmm. He was too good in the role. You can't.
It's happened.
You know what? I've realized
that I might have a bunch of people that were in Star Wars.
Anakin Skywalker specifically in the new ones ones.
I might have an issue with just like little blonde children. I think because I can't stand the guy. That played what's his face in Harry Potter,
Malfoy.
Trick. I never want to see that little piece of shit.
He's actually pretty awesome.
So I'm sure he is. So I'm sure he's
not
person.
Done anything else.
No, people also don't like him.
He did. What was it? This is the end. The movie where everybody's playing themselves is like Jay Baruchel.
Oh, he was in that.
People were making fun of him. They're like, "Hey, Draco." He's like, "That's not my fucking name."
So he has a sense of humor about it.
Yeah, he was even in The Flash, like for several episodes.
Yeah.
And you're like, "Oh, it's Draco." And you're like, "He's doing pretty fucking good."
Right.
No, I'm rooting for that guy. Yeah. I think he's a good actor.
I say that, but I used to say that about Robert Pattinson. Then I saw The Lighthouse.
And the Lighthouse. Yeah, The Lighthouse.
And now, whenever Robert Pattinson, he has a boner.
You're right.
I go, Robert Pattinson's Batman. I'm ready for him to be Batman.
I'm ready.
An old timey, like, crab boner.
Yeah. I like to latch on with my claw and bring it to me.
And complain.
The entire time.
Tom Felton, if you hear this, all you have to do is jerk off in the next movie you're in. And this whole podcast is going to be in love.
Yep. We'll fund it, actually. You want to just come over and let us record you jerking off? Let's just make that happen.
I was going to say, I have $40, but that sounds like it would be free.
Honestly, that's probably more than what he has.
I mean, $40 is $40.
Could he pay me $40?
Yeah. Something could be arranged.
Okay, all right. I'm a business lady. True.
This is all
right. Welcome to Behind the Curtain.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever listened to this podcast before, but this is 90% of it.
And I thought I was being racy with Bukkake at the beginning of the episode. And then here I am offering $40 for...
for something fun. going back to Halloween, the last movie, I saw Jamie Lee Curtis on set. We didn't have stuff together, so I'm really hoping that there is some more stuff together. Richard's tell us.
Nobody
variety.
Said she was particularly eloquent.
No, but I get what she's saying, because that sounds like a sentence I would say about something.
What is she trying to say?
That she didn't have any scenes with... that she didn't have any scenes with Jamie Lee.
And
she wanted some more stuff.
Stuff.
Because she remembers working with Jamie back,
But they didn't have any stuff together.
Yeah, they didn't have any stuff together.
Okay, I get it.
But now they're going to have some stuff together.
He didn't read it right.
No, he read it exactly the way she said it.
No. I think I read it just fine.
Wrong.
I can't talk at all about any storylines, but I can say that we start filming in January, and I'm so excited to return with Jamie Lee Curtis and David Gordon Green.
You know what I find ironic? Between her comment and the special feature commentary, who's left out?
Who's left out?
Danny McBride. Yeah, I'm really curious if Danny McBride's getting left out of the third movie.
Again?
What do you mean again?
He did the second one.
Yeah, he was part writer on the second one.
Yeah, he was the writer on the second one.
He was a writer. Literally was like, I thought he was going to be a truck driver or something.
No, I'm really curious if Danny McBride got cut out of the third movie.
Maybe.
Or maybe he stepped down.
Maybe.
That also may have been a personal decision on his point.
Yeah.
I mean, as a person,
he might have thought that it sucked and was like, I can't put my name on this
anymore. Yeah. He's like, I just can't do this.
I got to go back to making things like Year One.
I mean, yes. I have a really soft spot in my heart for anybody that's from Virginia. So, for example, Danny McBride from Fredericksburg, right?
Yeah.
The Flash I mentioned, he's from Norfolk. So, like, those people get a little soft spot. So, if Danny McBride wants to flip birds at, you know, the Halloween franchise. And,
oh, yeah. I support whatever he does. Danny McBride's from Fredericksburg?
Yeah.
And what really blows your mind?
The Fred Vegas.
What will blow your mind is Mark Ruffalo, a.k.a. the Hulk, is from Virginia Beach.
Yep.
I know Pharrell is from Virginia Beach.
There's a lot of folks from Virginia Beach. I mean, a lot of famous folks from Virginia Beach.
From Virginia Beach specifically.
But Danny McBride, Fredericksburg, like, not to give Ruby Live away, because I don't want certain people banning certain people, but, you know, it's like...
We're not from Fredericksburg.
Actually, we are from Fredericksburg.
Yes.
Yeah, recorded live from Fredericksburg. Yeah.
For fans of Joystick Maverick, any episode you watch, my co-host will most likely dox himself. So if you want really nice things, just pay attention and you'll find his house. And, there you go. It's a joke, but not a joke.
Right. I feel like there's a lot of that on this podcast.
What are you talking about, Ernie? That's not where I live.
Yeah. I don't even have a house.
I feel like at one point we've said the street names that we live on by accident. Yeah. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I have nothing.
You want my child? Take my child. Send me some money.
Do you want some trucks?
I'm never being invited back just for the derailing of every single segment.
No, sorry, trust me. This is what we do. We're only putting out 3 episodes this month. This is okay.
If this episode takes people 2 weeks to listen to, perfect.
Yeah. Next up, we've got Here Before, a Belfast set, a psychological thriller from Stacey Gregg. Had its world premiere apparently at the South by Southwest Film Festival this past March, where Megan wrote that it dissolves reality with simplistic mystery. I'm going to assume you mean Megan for Bloody Disgusting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably the only good contributor to Bloody Disgusting.
Yeah, that's why I left her name in.
She's the one we like.
She is the one we like. If you can't tell, we read everything they post, but fuck you, Brad Miska. Saving Films is set to release the dramatic thriller.
We should have him on the podcast.
We should.
Brad Miska.
Show me your dick and come on our podcast.
I'm pretty sure you cannot keep got inviting him people.
No, I'm pretty sure we can still get them.
You cannot keep inviting people onto our podcast by just telling them to show them your dick.
That wasn't me. That was Palmer.
You're right.
Can I pause time out?
Yes.
You say this is this multiple times offering to show genitalia.
So, show. Mark Hamill. Who
offered to be on the show?
Mark Hamill, who started a movie that we covered a few weeks ago. There was a scene where you potentially saw his balls and dick. And so we had the wonderful idea.
You do see his balls.
You do see his force. 100%.
You saw his force.
Saw dick.
So we had the question of how do you ask Mark Hamill if that was actually his force or if it was a stunt force?
Are those his balls or not?
And so we were just like, just tweet him. Hey, are those your balls?
Also, do you want to be on our podcast? No. Of course not.
Because Alex said you have to at least say hello first.
Hello. I liked your movie.
You're so polite.
Were those your balls?
He just responds, eggplant.
That would be amazing. Did you actually tweet him,
I would take that
though?
As confirmation.
What was, yeah, I did. What was the...
You have to keep doing it Kathy Bates style.
Hey, was that your wedding tackle? You know, you just put it a different way. Was that your...
tweet a different euphemism for dick and balls.
Yeah. Was that your satchel and spalachel?
I'm going to do it. You know what? I'm going to tweet him.
All right.
What did I say to him?
It's probably really offensive.
No. Would you like
some black licorice bubblegum?
Don't get banned from things unnecessarily.
Do you like your toes glued together? just asking.
I don't know. I tweeted
it out.
What
was even the movie that we were watching? What's it called? It was the anthology one. Body bags. That's right.
Okay. Saban Films is set to release the dramatic thriller in limited theaters on February 11, 2022, before hitting VOD on platforms February 15th. So this movie is getting sent out to die.
Well, no, because, I mean, limited theaters these days really is just like, it's going to be 20 theaters. In the
no, US. I'm just talking about a February release.
Yeah.
Nobody watches movies in February. It's true. Well, it's a fact. If I say it on this podcast, yeah.
Yeah. You see, just Palmer, to... Palmer's taking it over for me. No yes. opinions. We don't have opinions. We only have facts.
You just have to suspend all belief that people watch movies in February. Exactly. And then it becomes true.
You just have to accept it.
I'm telling you, it's just picking up. There are no opinions here. Everything we say here is a fact. It's not an opinion.
Fact. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that's why I have no opinions. I told this to Ernie the other. I have zero opinions about anything.
You have facts.
I only have facts. If I say it in the public domain, it's not an opinion.
You should not tell that to my ego. She is really feeding on that right now.
People tell Sam, man, you hold a grudge. He's like, no, I just remember facts.
Yep.
But my question is, at what point during the pandemic do we stop seeing limited theaters? Because the
well, no, because a lot of the limited theatrical releases are either particular cities, from what I've seen, where it's like 10 or 20 cities, or it's like small theaters like Criterion.
Yeah, not like regular theaters.
So it's not because of,
Yeah.
No, it's different theaters.
I do strongly believe that the Spider-Man movie is going to be what brings people back to theaters.
You think so?
Yeah, I think we're going to get a very strong box office return from the Spider-Man film.
Yeah.
I'm not like better say than Shang-Chi. What theater we should buy out for one, but
I don't think you can even buy out theaters anymore.
I think you can.
I'm pretty sure we could just buy four tickets to La La Tower and be like one of six people.
We talk about West Tower almost every episode, nobody goes to that theater because nobody in Richmond listens to us.
Exactly.
Fucking dicks.
We've had, one person from Richmond show up to any of our events?
They came with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went together. And now, they came to Bowtie with us and to West Tower.
And now they're on the episode.
No.
I saw
The Nun.
You did see The Nun. Yeah, you did.
What Quiet Place.
Okay, so two people have gone to...
Which, by the way, shout out Ben. Because of him, I constantly bring eye drops. Never again.
Yeah,
never again. So the synopsis for this is: when a new family moves in next door, their young daughter Megan quickly captivates Laura, played by Andrea Riseborough. There's no
Riseborough.
Yeah, from Mandy.
Yeah, Andrea starred Mandy. The Grudge and Possessor.
There's a lot of Mandy stuff tonight. It's weird.
Stirring up painful memories of her own daughter.
The best movie of 2022.
Yes.
Of 2022
and 2021 and 2020 and 2019.
Alex's top five has just been Mandy ever since that movie came out.
If you can feel like this for The Witch and The Lighthouse, then I can feel that way about Mandy.
That's I'm not fair. Disputing that's that. Fair. You're right. Yeah, you're right. That's fair.
I
you're
love that you put the accent on
The Witch.
That's not an accent. Well, that's a proper title.
Yeah. When she gave me my tramp stamp for The Witch, it was The Witch.
Two V's.
Two V's. Yeah. That isn't. It hasn't also become like a meme on our podcast or anything. stirring up painful memories of her own daughter who died several years previously. Before long, Laura's memories turn into obsession as... Have you guys seen the new Johnny Depp?
Yes!
Obsession.
Oh my god, he's like walking on the beach. I just saw
like a tiger behind.
Randomly a couple days ago, and I was the only one awake, I thought I was losing my mind.
He just randomly pulls out a guitar.
Yeah.
I was like, at least somebody is supporting Johnny Depp right now.
Yeah.
Somebody is supporting that guy.
I track his mental health by those commercials. I count the number of bracelets in the list. There are the
correspondence. So I think he was wearing like two or three bracelets.
Oh, he had several.
He's low?
No, I think it's the other way around. I think the fewer bracelets, the better.
The better he's doing. Because
I think the more bracelets is like, oh, today's a rough day. Just gotta keep
put some bracelets on.
Because each bracelet means something different.
Oh,
it's a different part of his identity. He's like, man, I need this with me today.
I owe Queen of England, right? The closer her purse is to her wrist, the worse she feels. The higher up it is, the better she feels. Okay, so gotta flip it.
Yeah.
He's not British.
So. I think it's just for covering up the track marks. But anyways,
like I said, that's my point. The fewer bracelets, that means the track marks have healed, which means he's feeling better.
Yeah, yeah.
So the fewer bracelets. Yeah. I think the tracks. Maybe like the track marks.
Point out that
he was playing the guitar.
Johnny did decline being on this episode. That's one.
We tweeted him, asked him to show us his balls, and he said no.
That's true.
Anyways,
Laura's determination to get to the bottom of it becomes all-consuming, and her family begins to fracture, and the line between the extraordinary and the real becomes ever more obscured in this haunting story about a mother's love. It sounds good, honestly. It sounds like it'll be fun.
A haunting story of a mother's love, though, I think sometimes seems like something that I can't handle.
Yeah.
That's tough for you.
I want to be able to handle it. but I don't think I can anymore. I got such a fucking pussy now.
You should definitely not watch Martyrs Lane.
Okay.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, I liked it, but like, yeah. if you're not into a haunting story of a mother's love, that's probably not one to tune into these days.
I'll watch it. I'll just be like,
So am I not in a safe zone where because now I'm a parent, I can't watch anything that happens to kids?
It's harder.
I don't know if it's like this for you guys, but the strange thing with me is as my child gets older, the less okay I'm okay with watching stuff. Like when he was a baby, I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then,
it's because those thoughts are running through your head at 4 in the morning.
Well, now he's like a person. Yeah, now he's like an actual little person. Before he was just a potato.
He can.
Yeah, talking about a potato, but yeah, they're like little people.
I told Kelly the other day she had to start watching her mouth around him because he started saying shit.
Nice.
Yeah.
She said, oh shit. He was like, shh.
No one else knows what that means.
I feel like
Kyle swears all the time because I'm also not great at
swearing. Dude, I say it all the time. The other day I walked in, I was like, this fucking dick.
So I was like, ha, ha. I'm like, I feel like that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, by the way, I do come to this podcast for parenting advice. I'm definitely here.
Do you want to know how to raise your children?
This is it.
This is it.
This is the epitome of it. Next up, Alicia Silverstone versus the Shark because Blake Lively apparently wasn't available.
Blake Lively would never.
Blake Lively was
I know, but she wouldn't anymore.
She only goes, like, what, 20 feet deep?
Yeah, feet deep.
Has that much changed for Blake Lively?
I actually have no idea.
I mean, but she's really married to Ryan Reynolds a lot.
Yeah, she doesn't even have to work.
Guy money is good.
Dude, that movie was way better than I expected it to be. Right. Okay, Alicia Silverstone stars as Jalen, who sets off with her husband, Kyle, played by James Tupper, for a romantic getaway at a remote villa on the shores of Vietnam. Ooh. Terror in paradise. Tight.
Huh?
Money's tight.
Clearly. Not Vietnam's beautiful, dude. It is.
Sounds exotic. It is. But I think that clueless money's running out.
Yeah, probably. There's terror in paradise. Yeah. The film synopsis
it's been
says.
Running out.
Oh, yeah. When a torrential storm descends, reducing the villa to a little more than a raft and sweeping the young couple to sea, suddenly another danger appears, a school of great white sharks. With her injured husband watching helplessly, Jalen must battle the deadly predators alone in this tense thriller that rides an unrelenting wave of fear. There's a poster and trailer available, and talk that there are over 1,000 VFX shots for this one movie.
So much.
Yeah, it's a lot. Saban Films will release The Requiem in theaters, in select theaters, and VOD on January 2022. So my issue...
Not that many theaters.
Yeah. I feel like...
Coming out in hometown theater for Alicia Silverstone.
That's it.
Did you guys watch Great White on Shudder?
Yes.
Yes.
What did you think?
I liked it.
I didn't think it was that great. This sounds...
Like that.
Yeah.
Shark movies are tough.
Yeah, they're hard to do without a big budget. You have to have a budget behind a shark film.
Or also you have to, I don't know. I feel like they're not hard, though.
So the reason I say they're tough is if you don't have the big budget, you've got to go the other direction.
Yes.
And you got to lean Sharknado. The problem
But original Sharknado.
But original Sharknado. But they, for lack of a better phrase, jumped the fucking shark after the third movie.
Yeah.
And
well, they sold out.
Not only did they sell out, but the movies just got dumb and terrible and bad. Because at that point, after three, and even including three, it was just like, this is how many cameos we've got.
Look, dude. You're aware the film's called fucking Sharknado, right?
Yeah, but it got too corny even for Sharknado.
The fourth one was so bad I couldn't make it through the first 20 minutes.
It's like they kind of embraced it too much and it became too... Like they... I understand what you're saying.
I gave Blake Lively, a little bit of shit as a joke in the headline for this. But The Shallows...
That was a good movie.
The Shallows wasn't terrible.
No, that was a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah, because...
Like there was a lot of dumb stuff in it, like... Why would you do this or why would you do that?
Yeah.
But whatever. It was a decent shark movie.
But they took the Jaws method and didn't show a lot of the shark.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You have to have a low budget to make a good shark movie. Yeah. Or have to have a higher budget to make a good shark movie. Like Jaws spent all its money on the animatronics for two scenes and that was it.
Yeah. It's true. If you're going to spend your money on something, it should be the shark.
Yeah, because the second you do a poorly CGI'd shark... Which you're losing 90% of your viewers.
Which is probably good that then, instead of getting someone like a Blake Lively, who's expensive, you get someone like Alicia Silverstone.
And I like Alicia Silverstone.
And
good,
I do too.
It's good to see that she's still acting, because I didn't realize she was.
The last thing I heard about Alicia Silverstone is when she got on all the magazines. Yes, because she used to chew up her...
Masticate.
Her food and then put it into her baby's mouth.
Yeah.
That's not that uncommon, though,
it's
apparently.
Not,
I feel like I heard about
but
that.
But it sounds weirder when you don't, A, yes. don't have kids,
yes.
and it was like 10, it has
and
a weird name.
Yeah. I'll, honest, not, I'll, like, be honest, I'll be honest, even like, with a child, even with a child.
I don't know, some...
Still sounds weird.
like a country with, like, a lot of tribes still
in it. I guess
in
my mind, I imagined her, like, putting it directly into his mouth from her mouth. She probably just chews it, takes it out, and gives it to
yeah.
him.
Yeah,
I think that's weirder.
It's not...
I'd rather just
Thunder.
Spit the food into
my kids.
Tropic Thunder, that's what I'm thinking of. I think that's the last thing I've seen her in.
She was in Tropic Thunder?
Yeah, she was in Tropic Thunder.
Who
I think
was
that
in Tropic
was
Thunder?
She was she when? Played herself.
When?
Oh. And whenever Tropic Thunder came out.
2020. Holy
Nine?
Shit, that movie is that old.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I'm looking at her list of other films since Tropic Thunder.
Nothing.
Haven't seen a single one.
She's been yeah. chewing her food and put it in her baby's mouth.
But to your point, a very expensive shark movie that was fun, but really wasn't great, was The Meg. Right?
Oh,
yeah,
so good.
Statham,
yeah, and that, like, that was a fun movie, but the, like, and putting
too
aside
expensive.
Putting aside all of the, like, yeah. Hollywood kowtowing to China aspect of it.
Yeah,
like,
well, that's the thing. You start bringing in the China money. And
but,
then,
like, putting all of that aside, that movie wasn't
bad. Right now,
that movie
just like American money.
But, like, that,
you're right. That's part of the problem.
But, like, putting all that aside, like, that movie wasn't terrible by any means.
It was
it was fun.
Awesome. Oh, The Meg?
Yeah.
Yeah, I walked out of that enjoying it. Like, it was...
It was, yeah.
It was
but
fun.
I think you were also overpaying for the actors as well. I think
yes.
that was a lot of the budget.
My favorite
Maybe,
actors
yeah.
were the ones stuck in that submarine
yeah.
way down in the deep.
Yeah.
The guy from Heroes and then, obviously, his supporting actors. Because, let's be
yeah.
honest, he had the funniest lines.
Well, it's for, so for me, it was just like, I grew up reading those books.
Meg?
Yeah. Meg.
Megalodon?
Meg? Yeah. Did you ever read Meg?
I know what a Megalodon is.
So the book that it's based, that the movie is based on, first off, the movie is nothing like the actual book, but there is a book that the movie is based on that was a very, actually very good book. And I reread it before The Meg came out. And it's still a pretty damn good book. It's one of those, like, youth novels, so you can plow through it, like,
super quick,
super fast. But yeah, it's I don't know. I agree with you. It's it was overproduced, but
that's overproduced.
Yeah. Well, what do you want me to say is overproduced?
But hopefully this one's not.
we'll see. All right, so Mickey Rourke apparently is going to have a take on Overlord.
It's Rourke.
I can't say his
Mickey
last
Rourke.
Name, okay?
It's Rourke.
Mickey Rourke?
It's Rourke. Huh. There's a second R.
I'm sorry, my name is Mickey
yeah,
Mouse.
Rourke. Where's the A to make it an or?
What?
Roar.
It's like, roar. If you're going to pronounce it roar, like,
well, it's
what
like,
the...
It's like, is this our universe?
So wait, say it one more time. How do you pronounce it?
Rourke.
Rourke.
Well, he didn't say that before. He's like, Rourke.
No, I heard Rourke, but Rourke is still weird to me.
That's all right. It's a hard name.
That's what I don't know.
Okay,
maybe
that's fine.
I don't. Maybe he pronounces it differently. I don't know. This is like the pair him par him thing that we've gotten
that's
into on this podcast multiple
or
times.
Or caramel caramel.
I can't even really say horror that well.
Nobody can.
That word. I would say horror, like
it's
a horror.
It's a
horror,
Dennis.
It's a horror.
It's horror.
Thank you.
Where's Danny DeVito right now?
Horror movies.
War Hunt, also coming up from Saban Films, a World War II set horror movie, has a trailer. Mickey Rourke.
That was good.
Now I'm going to feel weird.
No, that was better than you did it before.
Now that I've heard you say it, it doesn't sound like crazy.
Okay. Jackson Rathbone from Twilight and Robert Nepler.
It's Rathbone?
Is it Rathbone?
I'm fucking with you.
This is happening every name now.
Yeah, pretty much. And Robert Nepler star in the supernatural horror movie in theaters on demand and digital on January 21st, 2022. A U.S. military cargo plane loses control and violently crashes behind enemy lines in the middle of German Black Forest. Is that like a particular place?
I assume it's cake. I assume it's the Black Forest.
Yeah,
cake.
It's a racially ambiguous forest.
Okay.
It's a forest, I think, in like the west part of Germany.
Okay, I'm sticking with cake.
Okay.
immediately,
well, it's like, that's where the ham comes from.
Oh, Black Forest ham.
Maybe that's what I was thinking. Not cake.
Okay.
No.
I didn't realize we needed like a Boar's Head rep here to talk about this movie. But immediately, Ruthless Major Johnson, played by Mickey Rourke, sends a squad of his bravest soldiers on a rescue mission to retrieve the top secret material that the plane was carrying, led by Sergeant Brewer, played by Robert Knepper, and Walsh, Jackson Rathbun. The soldiers venture deep into the forest near the crash site. They soon discover hanged Nazi soldiers and other dead bodies wearing ancient magical symbols. Interesting. Suddenly, their compasses fail, their perceptions twist, and straying from the group leads to profound horror as they are attacked by a powerful supernatural force. Fighting for their sanity and struggling to survive, they must uncover the shocking truth behind the force before the Nazis, and do everything that they can to remove all evidence that it ever existed, even at the cost of their own lives. This sounds like Predator with Nazis.
Yeah, I'll watch it, though, because anything with dead Nazis is fun for me. But Overlord, I do remember being particularly disappointed with how that movie was done.
Yeah, you didn't like that one.
Yeah. I was really hyped about it. I was really looking forward to it, but it was a big letdown.
Yeah.
But we'll see. What part about it was the letdown? You guys already discussed that on a previous episode.
Man, this movie
was years ago.
Overlord came out, 3 years ago? Two years ago?
Yeah. 2 years ago. Saw it in theaters. I was super
high. Yeah, like I went and saw it in
theaters.
You
didn't like it either?
No, I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed it.
And honestly, I think it's probably the best. Like, it was fine. I think I was expecting more.
Expecting Inglourious Basterds.
Yes.
And you didn't get Inglourious Basterds. With zombies.
Well, no, I think one of my bigger issues was the use of the monsters in it. The Nazi experiment, and you never even saw them that much when they were there.
Quarter.
So I think I was a little let down with that. But it was fun. It was fine.
Moving on, we had a whole shitload of video game news apparently as we discussed the intro of this podcast. First up, Alan Wake 2.
Well, that's just the one big thing that I picked out aside from the Texas Chainsaw one.
But apparently there was a lot more.
There was a lot more
announced. Yeah. But apparently, after the surprise Alan Wake remaster earlier this year, Remedy is ready with Alan Wake 2, which will be Remedy's first survival horror title coming in 2023. So they're really embracing the survival horror with this one. They're going full Resident Evil with this one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or maybe like Outlast.
Okay. All right. We'll see.
I don't know. It's interesting because
you're a big Alan Wake fan. I know that.
So not just Alan Wake, but just the universe. So like Control, from Remedy, that came out kind of as part of the launch of the new graphics evolution. Their tie-in to that universe was really good, and then their expansion pack was about Alan Wake. So it was really nice to see that come back, and then Alan Wake Remastered came out. The original Alan Wake was really cool. Like just the way it was done. The usage of like the flashlight to kind of survive was fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to this.
The name of the game was called Alan Wake.
Yeah,
that's like a game, like a guy.
Yeah, that's the name of your character.
He's a horror writer or something, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's interesting though, also because like we're talking about a lot of stuff that's about to come out in January and a lot of stuff that's coming out in February. A lot of stuff that's been like pushed from the pandemic. But this is one of the first things that like we're getting a hard release date for like 2023. So this one's still a long ways out.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Even last night on the Game Awards, Sam Lake showed up like live in person and kind of gave a little teaser of his accent. Just like, oh, we have something special for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely one of my more creepy trailers of the night.
What's your stance on Alan Wake?
I haven't played. But Mahaffey, who's our third chair on the show, he is an adamant fan. So
is he? Okay.
He was very excited about Remastered.
Yeah. To me, like, he definitely is more the spooky play gamer. Like, for me, like, I'll play every once in a while, right? Mm-hmm. It really comes down to the game mechanics. If the game mechanics are slow or there's a little bit of, like, clipping when you're turning left or right, I get a little bit woozy. Hate to say it, but it works.
My wife can't play Skyrim.
Right, but I can play Clock Tower 3 on my PS1 or whatever. It's fine. So like scary girls and with just a flashlight as a power source, like that's fine. But when it comes to like just the jitteriness,
So like, I think what really excites me about this is like what I was talking to Mahaffey about this when Remastered got announced, and I was just like, this was on the heels not long after the Alan Wake DLC for Control, and I was just like, I don't give a shit about Remastered because Alan Wake is, 10 years old at this point?
Yeah.
Give me a sequel because it was a great game, and what they did with Control is great, and I want to see more from that universe because they're really putting together all of it. So I'm very happy to see that they're doing this now.
Yeah, I feel like the Alan Wake Remastered was almost a proof of concept. Can we do this? Can we have the same model storyline?
Oh,
so it's going to be good.
I think it was just them being like, hey, we need money for Alan Wake too.
Oh, you're not wrong. Man, you're definitely not wrong. Let's be
real. Yeah, I just, when they announced that, I actually think I said that to you on this podcast.
Yeah. That's, I mean, probably, and honestly, that's a really likely scenario for a lot of these development studios. It's just like, we're going to remaster something and hope that it sells really well so we can make a lot of money to actually make the game that you want to.
That,
yeah.
For sure.
Cool.
Yeah, like you said, Sam Lake also appeared at the Game Awards to announce the game and also made mention that Remedy will be purposefully going dark in prep to do a proper reveal in the summer. Mm. I'm sure we'll keep you appraised of that.
Summer's E3, right?
Probably, yeah. Well, virtual or whatever.
Yeah, the digital E3 now.
Yeah. We'll see whether or not they bring back BlizzCon. Moving on. Black Phone is apparently getting an update to the book. The film screenplay is by Scott Derrickson and C. Robert Cargill from Doctor Strange and the Sinister franchise, and it's based on the award-winning short story, one of 15 stories by Joe Hill from his New York Times bestseller, 20th Century Ghosts. The 20th Century Ghost collection is getting a movie tie-in re-release rebranded as the Black Phone Stories. From William Morrow Paperbacks, it's being released on December 28th, 2021. So this is just them slapping a different name tag on this?
Pretty much.
Okay.
New name tag, new cover art, all that stuff. But this was, we talked about the Black Phone, I think, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
We saw the trailer for it.
Looks really good.
Yeah, are looking forward to this.
Well, I think it's good to, like, re-release a book when people are talking about it, yeah, right?
And especially because, like, I didn't know about this whole series. I didn't know mm-hmm. that I knew the Black Phone was a short story. I didn't know it was a collection of 15 that are part of this collection.
No idea.
So I think this is a perfect timing to get people reintroduced to Joe Hill's work.
For sure. Smart. Next up, we've got a little bit of a Terrifier 2 update.
Fucking finally.
Terrifier 2 filmmaker Damien Leone recently took to Instagram to share the official poster art for the upcoming sequel. The official poster art for Terrifier 2 has incredible artwork by Sam Hain, 1992.
I'm sorry. You skipped over the lit clown emojis. I did not add any of these emojis, by the way. I pulled these emojis directly from his tweet.
Well, good for him.
Emojis are fun, okay?
I'm not saying otherwise. I'm just saying, like, do not...
Don't be such a boomer.
Lit clown.
If you grew up in the video stores of the 80s and 90s, you remember how important VHS cover art was. It really was. Honestly, I picked 90% of the horror movies that I saw growing up as a kid based on the cover.
The movies that I remember watching were because of the cover.
That's how I bought my bottles of wine now.
It's based on the cover. It's so true.
Is the label cool?
So how often do you buy, like, that 19 Crimes one with Snoop Dogg?
Almost every time. No, I've actually, not the Snoop Dogg one. I've had that one. It's disgusting. But all the other ones, all the time.
Nice.
Yeah, they do some pretty good ones. So we know how important the cover art was, especially for horror and sword and sorcery films. I wanted to capture that retro VHS vibe with a kick-ass artwork, and my goal is to deliver a film that equals or surpasses the promise of the poster, and I just may have taken a little inspiration from one of my favorite films of all time, and what I consider to be one of the greatest posters ever, Excalibur. This poster is currently available on our website at Terrifier Shop. Is it the same one that we got the signed version of?
This poster?
No. Yeah.
No.
No, okay. All right. People love the kid Ghostbusters, myself included. Jason Reitman's legacy sequel, Ghostbusters Afterlife, has become the 12th movie to hit the $100 million mark at the domestic box office this year. Wow. With a current domestic total of $102,200,045.
That's a really interesting thing to say because, like, 2 years ago, that would have happened in, like, March.
Yeah, absolutely. As of this past weekend, internationally, the sequel to the original classic has scared up $42,900,000 within the film's worldwide total the film's worldwide total is currently sitting at $145,100,045 in its second week of release in theaters.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. I walked out of it thinking it was a little fan servicey, but it set the foundation for it does. I think at this point it kind of does, right? Like, because it hits all those nostalgia notes, but it set the foundation for something. I would love to see the exact same cast doing something more original,
which is the same thing you said for Halloween.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but you know, that one didn't turn out too well.
Shut up, Sam. Both of you, shut up.
How is Afterlife stacking up to the 2016 reboot thus far? Paul Feig's Ghostbusters 16 ended up with $128 million domestically and $100 million internationally and $220 million worldwide. $229 million worldwide. Remember, the budget for this movie was a lot smaller than the 2016 version, so it's fair to say that by the time this is all said and done, this movie will have outperformed the 2016 film. Yes, it was also very apparent that this movie had a smaller budget.
Yeah.
And then you have to remember that the marketing is probably the exact same as...
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So if it costs that much to make, double that for the marketing.
Yep.
I mean, how much did you actually see from marketing for this? I mean, granted, there was marketing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't put Paul Rudd in something and
that. I think there were, what, two trailers for this?
Yeah.
The other one I saw was... at the theater,
or maybe there was a teaser and a trailer.
There was a teaser. Mm. There was the first trailer that ended with Dan Aykroyd picking up the phone. Right. And then there was the second trailer
at the occult
shop.
Right? Yes, yeah, that's right.
And then there was the second trailer that had more of the kids and more of a focus on Paul Rudd.
That was the one I feel like we saw in the theater.
I feel like they marketed the 2016 one a lot harder.
Oh, so
but
much.
But I think they had to.
That's my point. If it shows up in 7-Eleven, it's a bad movie.
Ooh,
I have a general rule of thumb. If a movie shows up at 7-Eleven,
does that exclude Marvel? Because a lot of Marvel stuff shows up.
No, it includes Marvel.
What do you mean it shows up at like the store?
Yeah, great example.
It's one of the DVDs that's available at 7-Eleven.
The Hulk with DVDs Eric Bana was everywhere. Burger King cups and shit like that. 7-Eleven, everything. Okay. All of a sudden,
like Slurpee cups and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
I take down 20
points. That's bad marketing.
It's the same way if my sports team, if any of my players suddenly show up in Allstate commercials, the Chiefs Packers or whatever, then I automatically go, we're losing half our games this year.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Okay.
You lose half the gross.
That is, for that. I love that.
It's probably not accurate, but that's my
It sounds
not,
accurate to
I like,
me.
I like the 7-Eleven.
I think it's accurate.
I think that's a good way to measure, like a good watermark.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it.
Sean Patrick Flannery is a demon.
Yeah, this is a weird one.
That's the end of the headline. Sorry,
it's going to be great because he's not at 7-Eleven.
No, honestly, it's super quick. He's in a new movie. Where he's supposedly a demon. The movie's called Nefarious. It's a shot in Oklahoma. He's slated for execution. He's a convicted serial killer, claiming to be a demon, and he undergoes a psychiatric evaluation to determine whether or not he's mentally fit to receive his sentence.
Who's Sean Patrick Flannery from Boondock Saints?
Yeah. So I don't know if you did. I met him. I talked to him briefly at Scares of Care a couple of years ago.
No, I don't talk to anybody at Scares of Care.
He's one of the two bros.
I think his table is right next to Kane Hodder.
She's in bed by 8.
No, I go. I see them. I just don't talk to people because my anxiety is here.
It's true.
When people, he's one of the main two brothers in Boondock Saints.
Yeah. Right?
And then
yeah.
The other one is obviously Norman Reedus.
Yeah, so it's the blonde one.
Yeah, okay.
I don't talk to people.
It's my job to go up and awkwardly this be guy. Like, can I have
I buy them coffee, okay?
This guy.
He was also in Dexter,
right?
Final
season of Dexter. Yeah,
I think so. Next up, Mike Flanagan is tweeting casting details for The Fall of the House of Usher, headlining this incredible ensemble. Leading this extraordinary cast is Roderick Usher from the Towering. He's playing the Towering Patriarch of the Usher dynasty.
So each one of these, by the way, was an individual tweet from Mike
Flanagan. Oh, okay. He's playing Frank Langella. Front and center, reuniting with the Intrepid.
Say the names.
Yeah.
Carla Gugino, Mary McDonnell, Carl Lumbly, and we're going to find out about his fucking dick and balls, Mark Hamill.
Yep.
Tell Mark me about Hamill's your dick and balls. Yeah, Mark Hamill. He's apparently
We needed to see him more horror. He listened.
He did. So that tells me one thing and one thing alone.
What's that?
He listened to our podcast. All right, so two things alone. He listened to our podcast, and eventually he's going to tell us about his dick and balls.
Yes.
It wasn't even his dick. It was just his balls.
It was just his balls, but I want to know about his dick, too.
You cannot talk about Mark Hamill like that.
I'm pretty sure he'd be down with it.
I don't think he would.
I just want to know if the force is down with him. That's it.
Because it's just talking about Mark Hamill's balls.
No. I just want to know his grooming habit.
It's so embarrassing. Can you guys not talk about fucking Luke Skywalker?
You guys think he's circumcised?
Oh my God, stop.
I don't even care. I don't even care if the snake has a hood on it. I just want to know, does he shave his balls or does he keep it like a bonsai tree? Slightly trimmed around the top.
Well, a bonsai is heavily manicured.
That's what I'm saying. Does he separate his chest hair, belly hair from his like boudoir hair or what?
No, he's got the treasure trail down to the landing strip. That's what he's got. That's Mark Hamill.
Unfortunately, I got those like shoulder back roads. You know what I'm talking about? Those are gross.
No, we call that West Virginia.
Baby hole.
Mountain Papa. Mountain
Road. Good place on Ernie's shoulders. Super gross now. Next topic. Here we go.
Sam, we got some now slaying stuff.
We do.
Let's do this before Alex looks like she wants to stab us in the face.
All right, so this week on the stream of movies that never ends, American Refugee on Epix, December 10th. This second Blumhouse Epix collaboration is about a family seeking shelter in a neighbor's bunker while the American economy is in collapse and the nation is under martial law. So we're talking like, I don't know, 2 years in the future.
I was going to say, this is too close.
Yeah, they find the danger inside is potentially greater than the danger outside, which I'm pretty sure we also saw in Cloverfield, the last one that had John Goodman in it, where the person was so like, I need to get out. You know, always doubt the people in there with
you. Mean the movie that had me utterly convinced that we needed to see him play Kingpin?
Yes.
Yeah. That movie was so good.
It was quite
good. Not horror related, but he is in this show called The Righteous Gemstones. Fucking awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
Awesome show.
Love him.
Also with Danny McBride.
Danny McBride. And then the other movie we got this week is, I don't know how to pronounce this properly. I think it's Achaura. Or Achaura, I don't know. It's on DVD and VOD on December 14th. Four kids have fun at frightening one another and decide to go explore a condemned, probably haunted house. One of them disappears in mysterious circumstances. The three survivors try to forget until Samir reappears. 25 years later, the group eventually will have to confront with the past.
Hmm.
The rest of the movies that we've got coming out over the next couple of weeks while we are gone for the holidays, they're all just DVD and digital releases of things that have come out in the last couple of months that are finally hitting home video just in time for the holidays.
Amazing.
Amazing. Thank you, Sam.
All right. We ready to talk about Final Destination 5?
I'm so excited.
Finale Destination 5.
How do you say it in French, Alex? Alex, your voice got so deep.
Destination finale sink.
Perfect. Let's go.
Oui, oui.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
All right, so this week we have got Final Destination 5, which came out in 2011. We are continuing our monthly theme of watching the fifth movie in a franchise that makes you go and rewatch the whole franchise. Palmer, I want you to remember this while you're trudging through Silent Night, Deadly Night 3 and 4.
I was thinking that when we were... Because Palmer did mention this, right? Yeah. He's like, this is the one month where I feel like I have to watch all of the movies afterwards, because you want to.
I was thinking,
is he going to go back and watch all of the Silent Night?
He's going to watch all of them. That's the kind of person Palmer is.
I'm just not a sane human being.
So this week we are tackling the, as of now, final Destination film. Starring Nicholas D'Agosto as Sam Lawton, Emma Bell as Molly Harper, Miles Fisher as Peter Friedkin, Ellen Rowe as Candace Hooper, Jacqueline McInnes Wood as Olivia Castle, P.J. Byrne as Isaac Palmer. There you go. That's your boy. Arlen Escarpeta as Nathan Sears, David Koechner as Dennis Lattman, Courtney B. Vance as Agent Jim Block, Tony Todd, the immortal Tony Todd, as William Bloodworth, and Brent State as Roy Carson. Here's the breakdown of the hilarity in this movie, along with some of the timeline from the franchise, and we're going to talk about the kills because they are a Rube Goldberg machine of murder, and it would be a disservice to just say what it is that finally offs these poor folks in these movies.
Fair.
Starting off with our traditional Final Destination opening, we get a quick background introduction of all of our characters, followed by the setup, followed by a police investigation, a survival funeral, and a meeting with Tony Todd. I do think it's important to say again that this movie came out in 2011 during the last great 3D hype phase, and it's scattered throughout this movie with no more prominent 3D scenes than the opening sequence. Sam Lawton is on his way to a company retreat with his colleagues, and while their bus crosses the North Bay Bridge, Sam has a premonition that high winds will cause the bridge under construction to collapse, killing everyone except his ex-girlfriend, Molly Harper, whom he manages to get across the bridge safely.
So she just dumped him.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And his gut reaction is to just...
I gotta save you. I gotta save you.
He doesn't save anyone else.
He tries. He tries.
Not really.
No, because he goes back for folks. Try to save them. He tries to save Olivia.
Okay, after he's out of the bus. Yes.
Yeah, fair.
But in his initial reaction in the bus, it's just
in the bus, it's Molly, get off with me, and then everybody else gets off, and they're like, maybe we should go try to help him get, try to help Molly get him back.
That's one of my,
you know, we got somewhere to be.
That's one of my favorite things, though, about this movie is, like, why the people are not in the situation that they're going to get murdered. You know what I mean? Like, either there's, like, they get punched in the face, they're, like, concerned. You know, there's always a reason why someone either gets off the plane or gets off the roller coaster or gets off the bus.
Yeah.
I do like that.
But, you know, it's 2011, so, like, yes means no still, right?
I think other way around. No means yes.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah,
that one too.
I don't love you.
Sure you do.
Yeah.
Sure you do.
Keep that one in mind.
Wow.
No. That's a fair point. Keep that in mind because I'm going to make that exact same point in a little bit.
I'm not saying I said that.
Alex is actually about to walk out.
We get in order because it's important. Candace impaled on the mast of a sailboat. Isaac killed as the bus falls into the water. Olivia crushed by a falling car after she falls into the water. Nathan, quickly and almost so quickly that you can miss it, whipped off the bridge by a support cable.
Yep.
Asphalt, coating and burning Dennis and melting all of his skin off.
So good.
Rebar impaling Peter, followed by a ragdoll off the bridge support that leaves a splatter of at least three bodies worth of blood.
Yeah.
And then a large steel plate cutting Sam in half while Molly watches helplessly.
Okay, so two things really quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You think that was too much blood when he flopped on the...
Oh, without a doubt.
Okay.
Because of how far away it was and like how small his body was
and
when
how
it
much
hit.
Blood there was.
Oh, yeah. That thing covered like half the fucking support structure.
Yeah. There's a lot of that in this, though.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like really egregious bodily harm that takes place throughout the course of this film. I feel like that's actually like a pretty common theme that goes through every Final Destination movie.
The piece of like metal sheeting that...
So not just that one, but I had an issue with that and the rebar.
That would never...
Because it fell like a foot and a half before it made contact with these folks. There's no way to do that kind of thing.
Also, that metal sheeting, like, that would just kind of hit you in the side and be like, you'd be like, ow.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
You would not get...
Absolutely.
Severed in half with your intestines flying towards the screen.
You might get like a cut, but you'd be like, ow, fuck.
He'd get a really bad bruise.
Yeah.
Like, I would have laughed if it was like six of them in a row. Ow.
They just keep falling off like a Family Guy
damn
skit.
Damn it.
No. I mean, yes.
So panicked, Sam persuades Molly, his friends Nathan, and Peter's girlfriend Candace, their boss Dennis. He doesn't really persuade Dennis. Dennis just kind of gets off because he's, you know, there. And coworkers Olivia and Isaac to leave just as the bridge collapses. After they're interrogated by FBI agent Jim Block, the survivors attend a memorial service for their deceased coworkers, where they are being watched by coroner William Bloodworth.
Okay, I'm sorry. I have to go back. Just one more question.
Oh, please.
Mm.
If you are on this bus and one of your coworkers flips their shit, are you getting off the bus?
No.
Are you like...
Absolutely.
So
does my coworker have a previous history of potentially losing their mind for whatever reason?
No, he seems like a normal, mentally stable man.
If somebody that me and my other coworkers have never talked shit about before freaks out, I'm getting off the bus.
You think so? Okay.
If it's a person that me and my coworkers have previously made fun of for just being kind of out there.
Okay. He seems like he's one of the more stable people in that bus.
No. See, sir, I'm taking the April Ludgate approach.
Oh.
The second I see a crazy person get off the bus.
I'm staying on the bus.
I'm getting off the bus with that crazy person to see where this goes.
Yeah, just following that. I mean, I'm all about the popcorn approach, right?
You gotta see what's going on.
That's fair.
However, I would be concerned if they made direct eye contact with me.
Like, yeah.
Get the fuck off.
If somebody did that, I'm getting off the bus.
Yeah.
Getting off the bus. But not because I think something bad is going to happen if I don't get off the bus. Like, because of, like, you know...
Catastrophe or whatever.
Yeah. Because I think that person's going to fucking hurt me if I don't get off the bus.
If Wilbur goes, get off the bus.
That's what
you're
Ben...
You're like, fucking, I'm out.
When Ben and I watch this, because he looks at his girlfriend or his ex-girl, whatever, and he's like, please, God, get off the bus. And I said, if if you broke up with me and said that to me, I would get off the bus because I don't want you loony bin running up and down freaking Seattle Bridge.
Just stripping off all your clothes and running up and down the bridge naked.
I'm not running because I'm like think that the bridge is going to break. I'm running because I'm afraid of what you're going to do.
That's a generational thing too, though. Like, imagine if you're like a 20-year-old, you're like, but which god?
Yeah.
What denomination?
So it's at this point that I realized this movie was like an old coat. It felt familiar, but I couldn't figure out why until we got to this first death.
And what
that
was
I
in the pocket?
Stuck my hand in the pocket and found $20, realizing I had, in fact, seen this movie before, unlike Saw 5, which I had not seen before, but couldn't remember until I got towards the end and I was like, yeah, I haven't seen this. So this one I had seen before.
These movies are very memorable from the first couple scenes, I feel like.
I don't think I saw this movie since it had first come out, but the deaths in this remind me very quickly that I've seen it. So we make it 25 minutes through the film at this point, and the tension is starting to ramp up as we see Sam in the kitchen of his work, along with the 37 things in a professional kitchen that could kill you. That's a real thing every day that professional chefs deal with.
It is, and we'll touch upon this in just a little bit.
Especially like in that scene, it opens up with them looking at the fryer. So like someone's getting their fucking head stuck in that.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I heard that bubbling and I was like, they're about to pull a Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
This was Final Destination 5 foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah. There's the will they, won't they story between Sam and Molly as to whether or not they'll get back together or stay together since he's supposed to go to Paris for a job. Paris, you say? Mm-hmm. Wasn't it the part of one of these movies? Don't you die if you're an American
We're going to die in Paris together.
30 minutes
that
in.
That was really good.
30 minutes in and death is finally fucking tired of
it. No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Don't be fucking mad because someone can do French accents. Look, and you cannot.
All I ever claimed to do was and wee wee.
Omelette du fromage.
But we're 30 minutes into this movie and death is finally tired of waiting. This motherfucker needs bodies and it doesn't care from who. Candace, our college intern, she dies during her gym practice from a chain reaction that causes her to fall off the uneven bars. Causes her to fall off the uneven bars and snap her spine and also her leg.
What?
Yeah.
So the way she falls. So I can understand the spine snapping, even though that's already really out of the realm of possibility.
She does a surrender cobra.
Yeah, she folds backwards. But as her leg flies over her shoulder, as her legs fly over her shoulders, and the spine begins to protrude out, and I know this because I downloaded Sam's slowed things down as the CGI went through this. Her leg literally is in midair when it becomes a compound fracture for some really bizarre reason.
Because death wants her to be dead and also have a fucked up leg.
No. I'm just saying, like
in hell, you only get one leg to walk on.
Yeah, right. Well, I turned around, I texted you guys, and I was like, how does Candace have a compound fracture in her leg?
This is the part that stuck out the most.
My favorite part about that, too, is when she's literally in half, backwards in half, someone's like, call 911. Yeah. So she's dead.
They're going to save her.
So
they're
going to put her back together.
You mentioned here
that this is a 6-minute sequence.
Yeah, so this is after a 6-minute sequence that builds up all of the things that could possibly or do go wrong leading to her death. And mostly stems around a small screw that falls off the AC unit in the ceiling and lands on the balance beam. Mm-hmm. And that's where her routine starts, and then there's another girl that gets on. And when she lands on it, that's the one that kind of kickstarts the whole chain reaction.
Yeah, she dances all around that without landing on it. Yeah, without any issues.
The camera work really builds up the tension of, like, is she going to land on this? Is this really what's going to start it? Because that's kind of what gave it away to me was, like, I remember the balance beams. Or not the uneven bars. And I remember, I was like, if I remember this movie correctly, if I did see this before, she dies off the uneven bars. But am I just imagining that? And she dies, like, she steps on the screw and she falls and breaks her neck falling off the balance beam.
Right.
So this is where I started to realize that I have seen this movie before.
Yeah, it does a good job of giving you a whole bunch of red herrings, though, because there's already before she even makes, like, her second rotation around the beams, like, there are, like, 4 or 5 different ways she could have gotten absolutely horrendously murdered.
Yeah. And this is actually a prime hallmark of the first two films that use tension and suspense to build up these kills rather than movies 3 and 4 that just kind of murder folks pretty quickly. Yeah.
It's even more fun if you haven't seen the movie in a long time as you try to remember exactly what it is that killed her, because I spent, you know, 5 of these 6 minutes being like, oh, is this it? Is this it? Is this it?
Well, it's but I think that's one of the reasons that, like, this kill sequence is so good, and the one that follows is so good, because it does eventually kind of, like, fall subject to
it starts,
losing the buildup and just slaughtering people.
It does start to speed up, but the tension is still really ratcheted up. So Sam meets Peter to console him, and Peter doesn't get it. He'll figure it out, though, because discount Tom Cruise ain't no dummy.
Which one is discount Tom Cruise?
Peter. 100%.
Which one's Peter?
I'm glad I'm not the only one that
The dark-haired one with the eyebrows.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So I would like to point out here that this is not the same guy that did Tom Cruise as a cock block for Funny or Die 15 years ago. That guy's name is Evan Ferrante, and I did go down that rabbit hole because I remember specifically, I remember that whole series they did for Funny or Die, and it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And it turns out that Miles Fisher, the guy that plays Peter, did, however, recently do a Tom Cruise deep fake that wound up leading to an interview that Evan Ferrante did about Miles Fisher's portrayal in the deep fake, and then told a story about how he met Tom Cruise in a hotel after trying to buy a bottle of Chateau Marmont and being told that if they sold it to him, they'd be fired and he'd be arrested.
I just want to know any of these people are that you're talking about.
I just want to know whether or not Tom Cruise just fucks fishes.
Just look up Tom Cruise as a cock block.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's famously known as, like, being the guy that kind of looks like Tom Cruise, and then he does
Evan Ferrante, but nails the portrayal of Tom Cruise.
He like hits a smile, and you're like, that's fucking Tom Cruise.
Okay. Yeah.
I will say one thing I did want to bring up. By this point, there are already subtle nods to the time period that did not, like, in my brain.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up.
And I was like,
what were they? Because
Pull out the flip phones, right?
Right. Yeah. So the first thing is your guy, Isaac Palmer, PJ Byron. He shows up with my first cell phone. Whenever I was 15, yeah. I got a cell phone from my parents. Thanks, Mom. And it was a Motorola StarTAC.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was like, oh, shit. Motorola
Dude, that was a fancy one. Phone, that was a fancy one back in the day.
But old. And then you go, okay, fine, whatever.
Well, right. Like, in my head, I was just like, I guess this is like 2010. Maybe that was like a discount phone. I don't remember.
Right.
Like,
but then at the funeral, what's his face? Head swipe cable guy.
The one with the glasses?
Nathan.
The black guy?
Nathan.
Yes, Nathan. He gets straight up. The decapitated, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
But at the funeral, he makes a joke, I see dead people.
Yeah.
Which was very funny.
Yeah.
but like,
for the time, my God, I didn't even pick up on that.
Because that
Holy
came
shit.
Out in 1999.
yeah, that's a good catch. That's a
good catch.
And then on top of that.
And that's a really good one to put in the movie, too, because even in 2011, people were still quoting it. Yeah.
And then you point out, obviously, Mr. Bloodworth. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the flesh, as a coroner.
Who also, Tony Todd, Mr. Bloodworth here, might be lurking in the halls of this college, which by itself is also kind of disturbing. The next day, Isaac is killed at a Chinese spa when his head is crushed by a falling Buddhist statue during an acupuncture session. Now, this particular line is the piss poor summary directly from Wikipedia.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm not going to discount anybody's deaths here because these machinations are fucking amazing and deserve to be told in full. So what actually happens to super creepy hashtag me too villain Isaac is that he swipes a coupon for 2 therapy sessions at the spa where he covertly asks for a happy ending.
From his dead coworker.
After he
steals change from them. Still,
and touches a picture of her and says, you were so naughty.
He ends up getting acupuncture and instructions to sleep for 30 minutes. He falls as the table he's on collapses, and all of the lit candles and incense in the room end up starting a fire in one of the towels that then light up the room as a jug of alcohol falls to the floor. After he's blasted.
I think it was oil, not alcohol.
No, it said alcohol.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah. As he's blasted into the wall against the edge of the room once everything ignites, safe from the flames, though, he slams into the wall where the Buddha statue is, which he had previously fucking fat-shamed, and he falls and crushes his head. It is worth noting that this character in 2011 might as well have been a prophet for the hell that was to come for Hollywood starting in 2017.
It's true.
Like I said, it wasn't the only time we were going to mention Me Too and what this fucking movie did.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, that was such a great scene. Like, you wanted him to die. He was such a bigot. Mm-hmm. I mean, just so...
How many possible fucking women could this piece of shit have fucked named Kimber?
Yeah.
Or Amber. But I feel like in every one of the movies, there's always that one person who's a total piece of shit, right?
Absolutely.
That you cannot wait for them to die.
No, he's just playing a young Harvey Weinstein, dude. That's all it's called.
Like I said, a total piece of shit.
I mean,
cannot wait to die.
He didn't go far from his character in Wolf of Wall Street.
You're right.
Oh, that is the same guy. That's where I recognize
Wolf
him from.
Wolf of Wall Street. Right. What else was he in? He was in Vinyl. He was in, God, what else was he in? He's been in a whole bunch of shit.
Really?
He's very much like The Rock and Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, dude, they just slap facial hair, different styles of facial hair on that guy, and he's a whole different person.
Still a piece of shit.
He puts on
30 pounds like he did for Wolf of Wall Street.
He's a piece of shit character.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta be typecast as a piece of shit.
Hey, everybody needs a job.
It pays a lot more than I get paid.
For 100%.
To just be a real piece of shit. I'm just kidding.
So what's his name? The guy from fucking Breaking Bad that's been in so much as a villain.
The one who played Jesse. Oh, with the discount Matt Damon. Jesse Plemons.
Yes, Jesse Plemons. He's typecast as a villain pretty much every. Well,
yeah, but he's actually a phenomenal fucking actor.
Is he?
Dude, he.
Yeah, he's.
No, I know he is. I'm just fucking with you.
Well, he wasn't the villain in I Think We Should End Things.
Yes, he was.
He was a possessive piece of shit.
Yeah, that's true.
Who wouldn't let her do anything.
And, he has been in a few
things.
And
made her get ice cream in the middle of the winter.
Nah, dude, she wanted the ice cream.
No, he wanted her to eat the ice cream.
It's the middle of winter and I still like ice cream.
He was like, let's go to the ice cream.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh.
He's just a weirdo.
She wanted to go home.
Yeah.
That's true.
And he was like, now we're getting fucking ice cream.
And we're going to go to this high school.
In the middle of Midwest.
That was a weird movie.
As I'm talking about it, I feel like I'm like going into like a fugue state. I'm like, was this what that movie was about?
That was one that, my God, I must have watched that movie like four times.
Too many times.
Sorry, Jesse Plemons, you're not even in this film.
I love you, Jesse Plemons.
No, you're right. I wouldn't say he's phenomenal, but I would say he's a good actor.
I think, what's his name?
Jesse Plemons. No, we were just talking about Jesse Plemons.
Not Jesse Plemons. He died a couple of years ago. He was one of the villains.
Was he reborn?
No, he was.
In a movie called The Lighthouse?
No.
Is his name Robert Pattinson? No. He's a phenomenal actor.
He was a villain in Mission Impossible 3, which is the only movie I can think of his right now.
I got this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm literally looking at Ernie right now.
Come on.
Was it?
Guys.
Hit me with the knowledge, man.
Why are we talking about him?
Though? Jesse Pinkman is actually in that movie as the younger brother of the wife of Ethan Hunt.
If we ever have to play like 6 degrees to Kevin Bacon,
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes.
Jesse Plemons Thank is a you. Young Philip Thank Seymour you. Hoffman.
Oh,
I can see that.
I mean, they look the same.
They look very similar.
Kind you think of. They have the same they're, acting?
They're
arc?
Getting the same kind of career arc. Both very much character actors. Jeez. Like I think Jesse Plemons has a very, very, very successful career ahead of him.
Do you remember that really weird movie that he was in?
For like another decade? Because
he dies
early. Way to jinx him. You heard it here first, folks.
Karen it happens.
Meanwhile, back to this movie
that
doesn't...
Die. He's going to die.
Back to this movie that doesn't have Jesse Plemons. Bloodworth, who's been present for both deaths, tells the remaining survivors that if they wish to cheat death, they must kill someone who is never meant to die on the bridge and thereby claim their remaining lifespan, which is super miss fucking leading info because our coroner / Satan / potentially the devil, well, which is Satan, whatever he is, whoever
not
he
necessarily
is.
I'm sorry, Satan is the light bringer.
Whoever he
the
is
liar?
a couple of movies prior to this told the people that only new life can defeat death.
I didn't like that new introduction.
Yeah, it's very weird.
Did you guys not like also the fact that in only the first film, whenever death was near, there was a glimmer of like a dark shadow?
That's true. And then there was just a breeze now.
Yeah. Or in the first film, the very first kill when the toilet water is slipping out. But slowly the water retracts.
Like
death didn't like kind of clean up its shit in any other movie.
He's like, I'm not cleaning up anymore.
It's still like freak accidents, though, right? Like, because it's like when we specifically with Candace, right? There's the
water pooling towards the bad electrical.
But also like the when they're investigating it afterwards, right? Even the people themselves, more so than any of the other films, he says straight up, he's like, I could have run this scenario a million times and it never would have turned out the way it did here.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, there is some acknowledgement in this film, like there is in the first one, that something really fucking weird is going on here.
Yeah.
I'm a fan that it didn't take, because what that does is take time away from the film, right? Having to show how it backtracks a little bit or like cleans itself up versus just, this is how ambivalent death or the devil is. It's already got it designed.
It already has it figured out.
Yeah, it doesn't need to like clean its mess up. Mm-hmm. It's got you coming from a mile away.
Yeah. All the while, this police, the police investigation is still ongoing. So interspersed between these long, elaborate death scenes, we get to see Agent Block trying to figure it all out. You would think at this point, after four of these movies, that some high-profile things like a highway wreck or a plane explosion or a NASCAR race gone wrong, followed by the untimely deaths of folks involved, would have informed this investigation, but it seems like he's never heard of this shit in his entire fucking life.
Or a roller coaster.
Or a roller coaster.
But it's like it's like one of those. So this is one of those weird things that happens in horror movies, right? Because like,
for no one talks about what happens.
I just rewatched all the fucking Saw films because I'm a goddamn crazy person.
Right.
And throughout
seven
the course,
movies in 7 days.
So throughout, it was like nine movies. It was like four movies a day for two days.
Yeah, that tracks.
That sounds more like you.
Anyway, so like
real busy those, time at work.
All those movies play out where like these things get more and more high profile, and every single detective that's tracking these, that's a new character in any of the Saw movies, none of them have ever heard of Jigsaw. None of them have ever acknowledged the fact that they're like that these traps ever existed.
Right.
Nobody in the traps acknowledges it. So I feel like that's just kind of like a passing trope in horror movies.
Yeah.
Which is why the first time I saw this through, I didn't pick up on the ending until like it absolutely hit. But this is another good example of kind of like subtle, because when you go back and you rewatch it, you're like, holy shit, dude, they're flat out kind of telling you throughout the course of this movie that there's no precedent for this whatsoever.
Yeah.
The guy's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah.
If I was watching this movie and nobody told me, obviously this is Final Destination, granted there's death involved, I would guess.
Right.
But the other thing I started to notice was the number 180 through all the films.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was like, now it became an Easter egg at a certain point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And for this one, you didn't see 180 pretty late. It was like all of a sudden towards the end. You might have seen it glancing across the sign. But
I didn't notice it.
It wasn't very much like in your face.
Yeah. I distinctly remember the first time I saw this in theaters when that plane scene hit. It didn't fire in my brain, oh, they're setting this up for the first movie. In my head, it was just like, oh, they ran out of fucking ideas to the point where they're like, they're recycling the exact plane show.
Are they on a plane again?
And I get that because the movie does feel like you get all the way through this, like, oh, we're just stuck in a loop. But it's not. It's a really well-written prequel.
It really is.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
You got to give it some credit because it's like it blends the cheese of like some of the late, like the third and the fourth one. Like it's still fun. It's still funny. It's not like dead serious. Like the first and especially the second one is. Like the second one's serious as fuck.
Super serious.
But like this one's just like, all right.
It's a little bit serious.
We get that the third and fourth one sucked, but they were campy. Let's take the spirit of some of those and then blend it with the serious tone of the first one, and you have this. It's well written. You can tell with this one, it was written by people who were fans of the first.
Yep.
Right. Of the first.
But
films.
Also that they knew what they were trying to do.
They
had a plan.
And if you're gonna end it, like you got to do it on a high note, right? That's what everyone wants to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is end it on a high note, and they're like, we got to fucking do this.
Yeah.
If we fuck this up, then everyone's gonna be super mad. It's gonna be like the last season of Game of Thrones.
Before
Game of Thrones even was a thing.
They should have taken fucking notes.
You should have watched Final Destination 5.
They made a bechamel of a film.
Yeah, a bechamel of a film, yes.
So meanwhile, Sam and Molly fail to save Olivia, who falls out of a window to her death at an eye surgery clinic. Palmer actually talked to a friend of ours about LASIK and whether or not this was the general setup. Fun fact, It is.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I was like, I messaged a friend of mine on Discord and I was like, hey, man, when you had LASIK, did they set you up in a vice grip? And he was like, yeah. Yep. And so I screenshot it and I was like, did they hold your eye open like this? And he was like, yeah, it wasn't quite like as pincery as that one looks. But yeah.
It's swoopy, but yeah, they definitely.
It doesn't look like the shit that they used in Clockwork Orange.
They would also never leave you unattended with your eye cocked
also
open.
Also true.
Like that.
Because they're supposed to actually be standing there like putting drops in your eyes if you
never be like, I'm just gonna walk outside and like take a phone call.
Yeah,
they would never do that.
But that's a great callback to the second one with the kid and the dentist.
I'm
Hey, I'll be right back. Here's the laughing gas.
Yeah.
And then he dies. What?
So her LASIK laser overpowered and lasered her real good, which led to her freaking out and flailing through a window, which also office building windows, super duper thick.
Yeah, and she was very far away from the window, and all she did was kind of like stumble, and then all of a sudden she was like out the window.
So is that faulty construction or is that death weakening the glass?
I'm putting that one on death.
Yeah.
I think so. Death pushed them.
Yeah. Sam learns that the survivors are dying in the order they were meant to die on the bridge and realizes that Nathan is next. Sometimes it's the order they die in the premonition. Sometimes it's the reverse. I think the second movie went in reverse.
And then the third one was weird too because they couldn't figure out who was on the roller coaster.
And sometimes death will skip to the next person if that person survives, but then work its way back around. So this series likes to play on both sides, but death's always going to get his man or woman.
You know what I like to think about death with these movies? Mm. It's like, all right, Jason Voorhees manages to get killed, right? And God and the devil are there just waiting at the entrance, right? And they're both like, yo, we're fans of your work.
Is that when she's...
you want to become death?
Just Rochambeauing.
Killing people ourselves is getting really tiring.
But I am become like death.
Time with this.
Is that what happened when Jason went to hell?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
He just became the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, they just hand him a scythe. That's the end.
They're like, vacation.
They're like, hey, look, Christianity's got a bad rap.
Yeah.
We need you to become Vishnu.
Yeah.
Vishnu, destroy the world.
Absolutely.
Please.
We're going to give you 7 arms. Have a good time.
1 machete for each.
Nathan, who's returned to the factory at this point, accidentally kills his coworker Roy during an argument. Roy's been up Nathan's ass the entire movie, with Roy being the head rep for the union. And remember, everybody, that we are pro-union here on this podcast.
Here, here.
Nathan just kind of has to take it and deal with it, because if you don't, you'll upset the unions.
He makes a valid point.
He does steal beer from him later, but you know, whatever. Fuck Nate. Fuck Roy.
Fuck that guy. That guy sucks.
Roy's a dick. That's not in the union bylaws.
Yeah. He's not supposed to have that anyways.
It's arguable that he was trying to save Roy at a certain point, but eventually he kind of changes his mind and just shoves him. And honestly, it doesn't matter, because when that drop hook goes through Roy's jaw, Roy ain't gonna say shit to nobody. He does relay this information to the remaining survivors, who believe that Nathan may have claimed Roy's remaining lifespan. And when Dennis arrives to question the incident, a wrench launched by a belt sander splits his face, killing him. Which is one of the funniest fucking things that a guy made famous from Anchorman in the Office has ever done.
But he's such a big name.
Yeah, he is.
I mean,
he dies so
friendly. Was he when this movie came out, though?
Anchorman came out like 2008?
Yeah, because The Office was on.
Because Office was already
was a big part of The Office.
So he was already a pretty big name. And he has probably the most abrupt death sequence in the movie.
It's
so
hilarious.
Nah, they give you a little bit of setup. As soon as the camera pans over the motor, you know something's going to happen.
Yeah,
and he approaches on screen.
In comparison,
he's dead. Like,
in comparison, his sequence is less than a minute.
Yeah.
Roy's is about 2 minutes. Olivia's is about 4 minutes. Isaac's is actually the longest, because his scene is actually split in half, because they cut his scene in half during the acupuncture section,
right,
and then go to another part of the movie and then come back to him. So
his
whole sequence
is
like 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
But this guy gets a motor-fed ratchet to the face, and it was at this moment when I realized that this whole thing is just a giant Canadian accidents in the workplace video.
Yeah, so
they're Canadian.
They're from Canada. Not
specifically .ca.
Yeah.
It did look like they filmed it in like the Pacific Northwest.
I assumed
it was
Canadian,
Seattle.
No, it's a legitimate Canadian series.
Yeah,
that's why I like it so much.
Palmer, please. I haven't seen these.
You've never seen these before?
No, I have. I haven't seen them in a long time. Please include the link for this in our podcast.
I mean, Devin Sawa is absolutely Canadian.
I feel like it's often as he says sorry.
Oh, no. Not the not the Final Destination franchise. I don't know if that's the video he's talking about.
This film in particular. So, all right. So
they filmed it in Canada.
Canada released a whole series of accident videos of accidents in the workplace, and they were like really brutal. So the very first one I think is probably the worst out of all of them, and it involves like a chef, and she's a young chef. She's making a career for herself. She kind of explains like her backstory and everything, and she's like, and all of that would have been great if I wasn't about to have a terrible workplace accident that could have been totally preventable. And as she's narrating it, she's carrying this vat of boiling oil, and she slips on some grease, and it dumps all over her.
Right.
And then you see like the blisters. Her skin's coming off, like, in everything, and then it just cuts to workplace accidents, and quotes are usually preventable. And so there's a whole series of them, and some of them are like people getting stabbed by like what do you call them? Rebar and like steel bars and stuff like that. And then what are some of the other ones we've got?
There's the rebar. There's the guy working on the scaffolding on the building where the
The building just explodes,
and he's wearing like a shoddy safety harness.
He doesn't,
and he just flies off the building, and bounces off a truck.
He bounces off a truck and then like gets hit by like another car or something. Yeah. Like, there's really.
I had no idea this was a thing.
There were six or seven of them in total.
Oh, I love it. Great.
And so I realized that this whole thing was just like a whole bunch of just like Canadian accident videos, like strung together with a little bit of narrative tying them all.
Yeah. So please include those because they are old, but they're gems.
Yes, please. I would love to watch them. Yes, please include them so I can watch them. Because they do sound like gems.
So back in the world of folks treating death like Omar and screaming it's coming, that evening, Sam and Molly rekindle their relationship at a restaurant where Sam worked. The same restaurant, in fact, that we saw at the beginning that is potentially a giant death trap. Peter, who is
what kind of food do you think he cooks?
French food. It's all French food.
His whole thing
is the bourguignon is good. The customer is assholes.
Yeah.
I'm going to do
the customer is an asshole. The bourguignon is fine.
Yeah.
He doesn't say it's great. He just says it's fine.
I mean, it's obviously typical good enough. Kitchen. It's obviously good enough for him to go stage in Paris at some fucking fancy.
Yeah, this isn't Ratatouille.
It could have been. It could have been.
It could have been. Peter
becomes Remy. Yeah,
exactly.
Peter's become unstable after Candace's death and interrupts the date and decides to kill Molly to take her lifespan. After he draws a gun, Sam and Molly both escape to the kitchen as Agent Block overhears the gunshots from outside and enters the restaurant only to be shot dead by Peter.
No, you guys go ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to ask a question. Can we pause on his thought process?
Yeah.
Because
who should die?
So his thought process immediately changes after he kills Agent Block because Molly even calls him out saying that you got his life, you're done. And he goes, well, he's a federal agent. You saw me kill him, so I'm not going to spend the rest of my new life behind bars. So I still got to kill you. He's pretty convinced
because he's deranged.
His whole thing at this point, and they've covered it a couple times in the movie, is, you know, why did Molly survive and Candace didn't? Like, why was she deserving to survive?
But I mean, if you're going to kill somebody and then inherit their years, you can pick some young coma victims, right? Like, I'm not saying kids.
I mean, she's not
I'm
old.
Not saying kids, okay?
She's in her early 20s. She's got a decent amount. Well,
yeah,
she dumped his best friend. You know, she's gotta go.
maybe that's the rationale. Hey, fuck you. He's going to Paris. He don't need you, bitch.
Hey, you're not good enough for him. That's my question. Is like, when he got so upset about it, he was like, "In your vision that we can't verify, she lived, brother."
Yeah, why is he so mad
she's
at her?
She's got to go.
Because his girlfriend died and she survived. Yeah.
Lots of other people's girlfriends in other movies died.
But it also would have been easily resolved if Peter or if Sam just turned to Peter and was like, "Well, I wasn't fucking your girlfriend. That's why I saved my girlfriend."
I think that this whole story arc is like one of the weakest parts of the film, right?
Yeah, because I don't love it.
He blames himself for losing Candace in the first place because he's like, "Oh, I should have been able to stop her from
doing the thing, the gymnast."
She's done it a thousand
times. But she didn't want to do it. Right. She's like, "I don't want to do it." And then he was like, "No, you go up there and you just do what you do."
Yeah.
And if my girlfriend, who literally almost just died, didn't want to do some weird gymnastics routine, I'd be like, "That's fine.
And let's get the fuck out of here.
Then let's leave." Yeah. But he was like pushing her because he's like a pusher.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, "Hey, you can't be a chef. You have to be a sales guy. And hey, you can't like just be a college student. You have to be a gymnast." Like, he was a pusher.
Yeah.
He's a pusher. I don't like him. Yeah. I don't like them one bit.
I'd be like, you want Frosties with those French fries? Let's go get them. Let's go get them.
You want two Frosties?
Yeah. Just almost died yesterday. We're going to eat all the cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
The whole, like, I think that the movie is trying to lead us to follow, like, this whole, like, this is a damaged man now, like, after losing his love.
And I get it. People do crazy shit after
his girlfriend, right? The one who got the staple gun to the back of the head.
Yeah.
He was like, "I'm gonna kill you." Not "I'm gonna kill you," but like, "I'm here." Remember, he went psycho.
Yeah, wasn't that the same deal in the second one? The guy that was driving his car and wound up parking it on the train tracks.
Probably
first one.
Oh yeah. So there are There are men in these movies who go fucking crazy.
I mean, I hate to say that that's not a stereotype for not a reason.
Calm down, everybody.
Calm down, dudes.
Calm down, men.
So Peter attempts to kill Molly and Sam to eliminate the witnesses who just saw him kill a federal agent, but Sam ends up stabbing Peter with a giant meat spit to save Molly. Yep. So two weeks later, Sam and Molly finally board their plane to Paris. We've made it. Cue up the music.
Dust in the wind.
There you go, Palmer. Keep singing it. So before taking their seats, they notice a fight between Carter Horton and Alex Browning, who are both removed from the plane with Miss Luton and the other students, revealing that the plane they're boarding is Volare Airlines Flight 180. And upon takeoff, Sam overhears Alex's vision from a flight attendant's conversation with a passenger. When he realizes that it's too late for him and Molly to escape, both of them perish along with everyone else on the plane in the explosion that follows. Molly gets sucked out of the engine, and Sam gets lit on fire and burns to death as the plane finally explodes. At Roy's memorial down on planet Earth, Nathan learns from a coworker about Roy's autopsy and the discovery of a brain aneurysm that was about to burst. That would have resulted in his death anyway, saying he only had days to live, as it seems, so, you know, he got out lucky. As the worker leaves the bar, the landing gear from the plane breaks through the roof and crushes Nathan, setting off the events in the first four films. This was a fucking prequel, and nobody knew. What a twist, M. Night. What a twist. Eat your heart out. You got nothing on this shit.
What a twist, you guys. What a twist.
Love it.
Loved it.
I don't have to even sit here and be like that asshole. It's like, well, I watched the first film right after the fifth film, and the tickets weren't identical. And they weren't, and I was upset about it. But, you know,
were they?
They weren't. I mean, they were close. All the information was the same, but like the year.
Did it look the same?
Well, it wasn't like 1999. It was like, or it wasn't 2000. It was 00. And I was like, God, man.
Now you have to specify.
You got to wonder, like, what intern totally botched that one?
Yeah. Someone should have been in charge of looking at that.
There are whole groups in charge of continuity. Yeah.
Well, I mean, somebody spent the time to, like, you know, pepper in the original cast. Yeah, you could shucked out of the first aisle there. And then the tickets.
You couldn't just look at the ticket. Did they just, like, CGI that on there? Because it looked like them.
It looks so good.
The footage, they totally spliced the foreground. It was spliced footage from different shots.
It looked good.
Yeah. So it was just...
Because I paused it, and it definitely was them.
It was just 10-year-old footage that was used.
Yeah.
So it looked a little different.
Which was smart because it was such a wide angle. And you take that grainy of footage, and you put it in, like, a smaller section.
You can't even tell.
It looks so... Oh, yeah.
So we got three lingering questions. I'm going to do these out of order from what I've got written here. So is there going to be another one? Didn't Tony promise us another one? Didn't he promise us one, maybe two sequels? I don't know. In 2011, Tony Todd said that if Final Destination 5 was a success at the box office, then two sequels would be filmed back to back. 2 weeks after this movie debuted, when asked whether he would be directing a sequel, Stephen Coyle elaborated, "Who knows? Never say never. I mean, it'll be up to the fans. We'll see how this one performs internationally. If it makes as much money as the fourth one, I'm sure Warner Brothers will want to make another one."
How did this one perform?
Well, we didn't get the sequels, did we?
So I feel like Devin Sawa is having such a renaissance in horror right now.
He is.
If they're going to do it, now would be the time.
So this was the least successful of the franchise. The entire franchise.
More than four?
In the U.S. Right? In the U.S. Okay. But huge overseas. Placing this one as the second best one from box office take behind the fourth film.
Well, the four was worst.
Four and five both had $40 million budgets, which were both almost double each of the first three movies, which does, of course, matter for profits. But this is, out of the entire franchise, the highest rated of the entire series on Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic, and CinemaScore.
Even more than the first one and the second one?
Yeah. So where the fuck is Final Destination 6? Absolutely. Higher than all of them. So in January 2019, a new installment was announced to be in development from Warner Brothers Pictures and New Line Cinema with Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan, the fucking guys we talked about last week with the Saw franchise, who would write the script, with the plot described as a reimagining of the franchise. However, in addition, in August of that year, 2019...
the forefront of horror.
Apparently.
Well,
with Devin Sawa.
In August of 2019, Devin Sawa expressed interest in returning to the franchise in the reboot. In March 2020, the film, set in the same canon as the first five films, was announced that would focus on first responders.
Right.
With series producers Craig Perry stating, We're toying with having it take place in the world of first responders, EMTs, firemen, and police. These people deal with death on the front lines every day and make choices that can cause people to live or die. We rely on their good judgment, expertise, and calm demeanor. So why not put these people in the nightmare situation where every choice can bring about life and death?
That's but now a good for idea.
That is so good because you can't do the same thing. You can't do the same like premonition and then people dying.
We're thinking that the world might be an interesting way into a Final Destination movie and one which can also generate unique set pieces in a very credible way. And then
so
we got
creative.
It. Then we got it. On October 5th of 2020, series creator Jeffrey Reddick confirmed that a sixth film had been in the works prior to COVID-19 pandemic. And finally, in October 2021, so just a couple of months ago, Laurie Evans Taylor was announced to take over the writing of the screenplay for the film, which is expected officially next year.
Let's go.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. If we hadn't watched this movie, I would not have been nearly as excited as I am now.
The synopsis still holds. The plan for next year's movie is still based around first responders.
Cool.
That could be good.
Is Devon Sawa going to be in it?
That they have not confirmed any casting. They have not announced any casting, but Devon Sawa has openly expressed interest in coming back.
I'm sure.
That's wild, you considering know? Part five was a decade ago.
Yeah, that's
insane. Over it.
It's hard to believe, like, because honestly, like, the whole so I was talking to both of these two in text, this whole thing was supposed to be in 3D, right? Because there was a big fad for it, like, at the time. That whole fad to me doesn't seem like that long ago, but like, I paused and thought about it, and I was like, yeah, my wife and I were in our second apartment, which was a long time ago now.
It was like, yeah.
Yeah, we're still carrying the scars.
We are still carrying the scars. Yeah. I feel like the fourth one you notice that the most, where they're like trying to make kills for...
Yeah, especially those tires. Come on, man.
It always made me nauseous.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. It gave me headaches.
Yeah.
The glasses.
I'm glad we've moved on from that.
Yeah, so am I.
I like that IMAX survived and 3D died.
Yeah,
I just think it's interesting because like we had the same thing happen. Like, you get this far in a franchise, and like all of a sudden, producers are just like, "Let's just make it in 3D.
Let's make it in 3D,
and it'll be fine." You know, we had the same thing with Friday the 13th.
Yeah,
I mean, it's happened so many times throughout, especially with horror in general.
Jaws did it. Piranha did it.
Yeah,
I feel like horror is a very good genre to showcase 3D. Right? There's lots of.
You can do some crazy body part flying at the screen. Yeah. It doesn't take a whole lot of creativity to be like
explosions.
Yeah. I think the only film that didn't make me want to vomit in 3D was the Hobbit series, like the first Hobbit, second, and third, because it was such a faster frame rate.
It didn't bother you? Okay.
Yeah, I think it was like 50% faster because of that anti clipping.
It felt
smoother. And for me, it wasn't like, oh, here comes a knife.
Knife!
It was like, here's some bumbly bees that are too big.
Yeah. Here's a field that looks like you're in, like, the Shire. Yeah. I appreciate that.
I'm okay with, like, a huge, you know, golem eyeball or whatever. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, it definitely wasn't like, we are clearly adding this one 3D effect skull to the in front of you, so no one had to come back.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Which,
I agree.
All right, so the two final lingering questions, and the most important ones of the entire episode. What is your favorite death? And it can be from any movie in the franchise. It doesn't just have to be this one.
Okay.
I will start out by saying, out of everything, the two that have stuck with me the longest.
I feel like you're going to say exactly the same ones that I'm going
to
say.
Well, one of them is very obvious. One of them is the same one that stuck to everybody. The log truck on the highway. It stuck to everybody. Every time I'm behind a log truck, that movie fucking goes through my mind.
Classic.
Great fucking death sequence. But the one single death catching up to people death that has always stuck with me because I think it's fucking hilarious is the kid in the first movie who runs out and gets crushed by the plate glass window.
Oh, yeah. And his mom is like,
his mom, because his whole, because that movie came out around the same time as that Adam Sandler movie, Big Daddy, where he tells the little boy to go play with the pigeons and he runs off and chases the pigeons. So every time I see that movie and I see that death, I just hear in the back of my mind, go play with the pigeons, buddy. And he just runs off and the pigeons fly off and the crane operator freaks out and he gets crushed by the plate glass. And that was one of the first movies that I ever tried to slow down and watch in like slow-mo.
Okay.
To see how they did it and to see the special effects, because you see his body just fold in half backwards, similar to the way Candace dies. But that shit's just fucking hilarious, and it has stuck with me ever since.
It looks better in that movie, though, because it's not all CGI.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ernie.
All right, fine, I'll go. I definitely agree with your first one, but the one that really sticks with me is, and this is silly, the second movie, second Final Destination, because it's the last one of the film, right? Everybody survived. Yay, there's the cop, there's the girl. They're at the farm for some reason. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, Jimbo, whatever the kid's name is, go check on that barbecue. And he goes, and they're like, they're kind of like half, like, oh man, I can't believe that, you know, that gentleman, he saved him right before he got sliced in half by that barbed wire post. And then 2 seconds later, that barbecue just erupts.
And his, like, mama goes,
her just losing it. It's like,
because doesn't part of him land on her plate?
Yeah, it's arms.
His leg. Like, oh yeah, his arm. Yeah. Like, yes. That is a good one. I always liked in the third one when the girls get locked in the tanning beds.
Yeah.
I always, it's like a classic. I mean, it's one of the only ones where you see titties, if not the only one you see titties.
It is the only one, yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be crass, but I love that one.
Too. Yeah. And they just get, I feel that one. Like, yeah. It gets so, because
that,
I, like,
one gets to you.
I feel so hot and claustrophobic, and I hate it. And then it explodes on their, like, eyeballs. I feel like it has a lot of, like, pulls pieces from a lot of different kills in the movie and to make, like, a pretty bad one.
Yeah. That's one of those moments where, like, my other half would be like, those are nice boobs, huh? And I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Boobs? What?
They're not. Huh? My dear, these young women, these respectable people.
Sleep.
When I watch movies,
they are dying. Right
when
now.
I watch horror movies, I just call titties and Ben just comes running. Like, titties.
I don't even have to do it. I just, like, walk into a room. Michelle's like, how do you do that? And I'm like, what? And I look
at
the screen.
What are you
it's
talking
just
about?
Breastuses and sexual scenes.
Why?
But yeah, I like that one. I feel like that one's also pretty iconic.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Palmer? What's your favorite of the series?
I think it's probably the airplane from the very first one. It's just like...
Just the whole airplane?
Well, like, it's like that whole, like, sequence is... Mm-hmm. is I think it... Like, when I first saw that, like, my mom was a flight attendant, right? And then,
oh,
like...
Oh,
that's gotta hit hard. And I didn't see this movie until post 9/11.
Mm.
And it was like, I think... You know, 9/11 happened, and I saw it probably like 6 months after 9/11 happened. So it was like a combination of like, oh shit, like that could happen to anybody type of thing. And you know, like my mom works as a flight attendant. It is like, it's just like it. I don't know, the reality of it had some extra weight, I think.
So and if then, we're talking full sequence, though, yeah. I'm going roller coaster.
You think the roller coaster?
Yeah.
So yeah, the roller coaster's fucking
roller coaster
gnarly.
For sure.
Yeah.
That one's so fucked.
I think the punchlines that stuck with me was your scene, excuse me, the scene with the airplane mm-hmm. where there's a baby in first class.
And it's oh, like, yeah. Oh,
it would be a real fucked up god to take this plane down. Yep. And then he turns the corner and there's somebody who's handicapable and he's like, a real fucked up god.
Yeah.
We're like, this is going to happen.
It's like, kind of like with Saw. I feel like the first couple ones were like a lot darker.
Oh, yeah.
You
oh,
know?
Yeah.
Like they.
I don't know, man. They're like the Saw frame. So we were talking about it on the last podcast where we were just like, you know, oh, you know, like he, like Jigsaw had like a point to what he was trying. That motherfucker had no point, dude.
In
that,
the first
that,
one?
No, that motherfucker flat out had no
he's
point
a psychopath.
At all. Like, yeah, 100%. He was one of those people that was so, he smelled his own farts so much that he fucking like believed what he drank his own Kool-Aid.
His own Kool-Aid.
Cause but that's my point, though. That still gives him in his mind a point. Amanda was just a psychopath who was just out for blood.
He was just a psychopath.
Which was
too.
Same with the other guy.
He was literally putting innocent people in just absolutely horrendous situations. Like in Seven, where they're fucking like, it's literally two boyfriends and a girlfriend at the top, and she's cheating on them with like the other guy, right? And so she deserves to get severed in half, like along with the same person that like fucking. The only one who seemed justified in all of that was poor man Stallone actor. Because he's the only one that kills somebody for fucking killing his sister.
Yeah.
Everything else is bullshit in that movie.
So
it's
you think
bullshit
she could get...
reasons.
What?
What do you mean?
So the couple, it was a guy, a woman and two guys.
Yeah. Why does she deserve to die for cheating? That's right? That pales in comparison to yes. being a neo-Nazi that kills your sister.
That's what I was going
to
say. I was like, that doesn't really seem like a reason to get murdered.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Pretty this standard. Is all bullshit except for him.
50s dad had a 50s mentality to marital he was fidelity.
Old. Okay.
Anyways, that's a
different movie.
I say this in regards to a man who is divorced.
Why are we always talking about Saw now?
Because that's the only thing
I just watched.
I'm going to spin it in a different direction. I know you've seen this one too. But to your point, the roller coaster of deaths
in
part three, great because I love the movie 13 Ghosts. The original back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Plus 13 Ghosts was like. I made a new roller coaster for my wife for her birthday. And
for her birthday.
And all of a sudden, you know, the roller coaster delinks.
Yeah.
And I was waiting for that to happen. And I was like, oh, that's right. That's not this movie. Okay. 13 Ghosts. And then you get Jean Grey, who's like ready to die too, from the guy from Pirates of the Caribbean.
As somebody who's a fan of the original, what's your take on the, what is it, like 2002 remake?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's so great with Tyrese and what's her face.
Okay, I thought you were talking about like the 60s one.
They just put that on Netflix like a couple months ago.
It's so fun. It's
so good.
It's so fun. I mean, 13 Ghosts. Seeing that guy put his head in a lion like as a kid.
The movie's so good.
I can't believe they're doing this with. Oh, my mom's like, and they're using mirrors. I'm like, no, they're fucking not, Mom. I hate to tell you this, but I'm 12, and I know this is fucking not with mirrors. But no, but to be fair, that whole, even that sequence when they're in the elevator and it's like, oh, God, that actor, what's his name? God, I can try to do his voice terribly, but he's.
Please do. Try it.
Captain Barbossa. From the Pirates of the Caribbean.
You can try to do his voice, though.
When he's trying to kill his wife, and he's very evil.
That's good.
Yeah.
I liked it.
It's like he's in the room with us.
He's like, oh, dear, I made sure the guns were fully loaded for your birthday.
That is good. Oh, my gosh, you're so much better than Sam.
So, all right, so we finally figured it out. In the hierarchy, I'm better than Palmer, Ernie's better than me, everything in the world is right.
I'm not even on this, thank God.
In the podcast description, I'm going to put that he was with us. Special guest. It's going to be Ernie. It's going to be...
I'll be whoever you want.
Captain Barbossa came in right for the end.
Yeah.
So what's your last question?
The last question was the rating.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the last little bit of this is the rating. So okay. I was trying to figure out what to rate this, but in the name of 3D because of this movie and 5D because of the fifth... Final Destination. Out of 5 Ds, how many Ds are you giving not just this film, but also because it's a movie that makes you watch the whole franchise? Additional score, how would you rate the franchise?
So it's two different scores.
Two different scores.
Okay. I'll go. I'm going to give this a 3.
Okay.
I had a really good time with this movie. I actually watched it 4 times because I wanted to.
Yeah.
Which is...
That's all right.
A lot more than I normally do. Yeah. And I would give the franchise... I only rewatched 3, 4, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't rewatch 1 and 2 because I remembered them the best. I didn't feel like I needed to. I would like to. I will. I'm going to give the franchise a 3.5.
Okay. Okay.
May change if I watch the first and second one.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go next. Hey, everybody. This is Ernie. How are you? I've been here. And Captain Barbossa. I think for this film, I'm going to go on a scale from 1 to 5, probably like a 4.2. I'm going to be a little chintzy on it. Is that against the rules?
No, you can do 4.1272 if you want to.
It feels true to your heart.
You can give it whatever you want.
I'm saying 4.2 because it was such a good prequel that I didn't notice it. I mentioned the cell phone. I mentioned like the kind. I didn't really notice that nobody felt the need to Google shit the entire movie.
That's true.
And I was just like, it didn't take me out of anything.
God, the days before smartphones and the internet ruined movies.
Yeah.
And like your brain goes, they didn't Google anything because they're fucking running like the whole time. Everybody's running from death. Oh no. And then you finally realize, because everybody's petrified. But if you watch the first film, obviously Devon Sawa's got like books from the library on like aerodynamics and stuff. And like,
library books.
Right? Yeah, nobody was giving shit about research. You just pull
up Wikipedia?
What the fuck is a library?
but as a franchise, I think this, if we're counting this part 5 as like a reignite, you should watch all of them. I'm definitely throwing a 3.8.
I think in part three, I think four, God, four. Yeah. Even like the 25 minutes I got into part four today, just trying to like.
Yep.
It's crazy that four was financially the most successful.
Dude, I don't know how.
Was it?
I don't know how it was.
It's crazy.
It was. Wow. It was difficult.
NASCAR fans. I'm giving it all.
I like NASCAR. I like NASCAR. I am a NASCAR fan.
So what are you giving the series?
You said 3.8.
3.8. Okay.
And again, I only say that because I think the number four to me was just so low bar. Like you were hitting such a like small fruit with it. Like the racist guy, the hey girl, why don't you sit down in front of me? Like just
grab
all
the cowboy
of that.
Hat.
Yeah, the cowboy hat.
Yeah.
Listen, as a tall person, I know if I'm being a dick, and I'll sit down in front of you and go, "Can you see?" That's just parts of the rules.
Yeah, well, he did though. He was really nice.
Yeah, and she was like, "Okay, yeah." And he moved.
Sorry, but you're right. Yeah,
but come on.
I'll give this movie a 3.75.
Okay.
nice.
I'm going to take off a full point just for the first 20 minutes feeling like a made-for-TV movie.
Why was the intro so long?
I don't know. And it, like, the acting was not very good.
No.
It's definitely made-for-TV feel.
I also had a hard time realizing if they were in high school or working. Yeah. I was like, well, how old are these people supposed to be?
Very weird. But 3.75.
Young professionals.
A 3.75 for the movie. And a 3.5 with a star for the franchise. And I'm going to do what Palmer did with Halloween. This number can easily go up or down depending on the next one.
That's not fair.
No, I think 3.5 to this point.
Okay.
3.5 to this point, but thanks. Talk to me next year when Final Destination 6 comes out and this movie, or that rating is either going to go way up or way down.
Okay. All right.
All right. I'm a 3.5 with Final Destination 5. which means that we are...
So a 3.6.
My math is not.
Which feels like.
And then for the whole franchise, I'd give it a 3.5 also. That divided by 4.
Final Destination 4.
3.7 across the board for all the series.
I haven't seen Final Destination 4, but everything I've read about it and everything I've heard about it really just drags that score down.
I was going to say, I feel like the total score for the...
I'm honestly not sure if I would give the series a 3.5 if I've actually seen Final Destination 4.
Oh, you're definitely going to... You're going to lower it so bad.
It's so bad.
You're going to lower it so bad.
It's so bad.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
Not 3.6 for the movie, though. It seems a little high, but that's just my opinion.
Alex with the only opinion.
Also, why am I
the
weird one that I gave them a 3? I don't understand why.
Because in the back of my mind, I was thinking that you gave Saw 5 a 2.
I did.
So this is obviously for you a better movie, which is all that I think matters.
It also fits in the genre of movies that I like more.
Yeah.
On the scale, I feel like, yes, this is a 3.
Yeah.
0.5 versus a 2 of us. Yeah.
Also, I feel like normally when we do the podcast in prior years, I give too high of points.
You have gotten stingier.
I've been a little bit more stingy with my points. I feel like everything I was like, that's a 5. That's a 5. It's a 4. I feel like I'm being a little bit more selective this year.
I think a 2 was like tied one of the lowest scores you've ever given.
What?
I think the 2 last week was one of the lowest scores you've ever given.
No, I've given 2 multiple times this year.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you like me where you don't give ones? I don't give
ones. I never give ones.
I think I gave it a 1.5.
If I make it through the whole film, you've already hit a 1. So, correct me if I'm wrong. There's one set of questions on this list. It was if you were to die.
That's right. I did skip that one.
What would your obituary be? I thought about it a little bit.
How would you die if you survived due to a premonition? Yeah. How would death come back for you? Mine's super easy, and it almost happened today.
Okay.
I would die in a really just typical, stupid way. Going down a flight of steps, holding something in my hands, tripping over a cat, breaking my neck, and landing in a very, very compromising position.
Kind of like the gymnast, but...
Kind of like the gymnast, but the caveat would be my army of cats would then just eat various parts of me.
Okay.
That would be my death.
Nice.
Nice.
But what would your obituary say? What would the final 5 sentences be about Sam?
How compromising is the position?
Well, it's almost like...
I think clerks.
I'm asking like a disclaimer sentence for you. Like, what would be you know, your warning label on your way out.
Why don't you go first, Ernie?
Oh, I'll tell you.
Oh, if you, yeah, if you've got an idea for an obituary, right, go
so
for it.
I'll tell you my death first. My death is going to be super easy. So one of the many things I try to avoid every single day is basically making my anti-slip mat in my shower completely fucking pointless. Like, just because the soap I use and all that kind of stuff makes it slippery regardless. And I'm already so hairy, so there's just plenty of things.
There's hair and soap and slipping. Yeah. And
so I just know what's going to happen is I'm going to pretend to get out of the shower to, like, put a towel down and step on it and dry myself or whatever. I don't know. That's not going to happen. And I'm just going to slip out. Me and that faucet that it makes it a tub are going to collide. And there's no particular part of my anatomy that where it's going to hit. It just doesn't matter where it hits. My body, my legs, my head.
Everything is going to be a compound fracture.
Yeah. It's just going to be viscous.
Is it going to go through you?
Oh, I mean, it's just going to be like...
The drain is going to go through you?
It'll just connect, in any kind of spot and just bleed out. Like,
okay.
Like the faucet, how it comes out the water, the normal end, yeah. It'll just be a faucet out of the other end. So I know it will. The funny thing, you'll be like, where's all the blood? Well, it's in the tub down the drain. It just went.
It's clean.
Yeah. My obituary.
This is the cleanest suicide I've ever seen in my life.
My obituary would say, like, oh, here lies Ernie Hawkins. He's left by his wife, his lovely daughter. He was a philanthropist, a narcissist. But he always paid his taxes. And that would really, really be it. Maybe the final words, my mom will get really creative with it. Ernie always said that death was only the beginning. And that would be it.
All right. How are you going, Alex?
So I almost tripped off a ladder today trying to put the star on I feel like I would also just fall, you know, and hopefully stab myself on something, because I feel like those are the better kills. I feel like those are more interesting. Or like, no, I get it. I know exactly what it is. I take everything back I just said. So I'm drunk swimming in a fancy person's pool. Okay.
Fancy person, not your
not my pool.
Not your pool. Your no. Trunk. Okay.
And all of a sudden, like, something happens and I get, like, knocked in the head. And the automatic pool.
Oh, shit.
You know, the cover comes.
That's terrifying to me.
Yeah. And so then I try and, like, get out of it. And there's sometimes there's, like a spear. And then I drowned.
Oh, no.
Is there a song that goes through your head at that moment?
Dust in the Wind.
And I feel like my obituary would say something about... I would like to go back to what we did a couple episodes ago and say my obituary like I was ordering a Papa John's pizza.
All of a cheeseburger pizza.
No.
Sorry, a shakaroni.
Extra pickles.
No, not Papa John's. Well, no, it doesn't matter. Any pizza that has an online ordering service.
Little Caesars.
Sometimes she picked too many toppings. Sometimes she didn't pick enough. But no matter what, her pizza was never right. Amen.
That's so depressing.
Yep. But she ate it anyway.
Did you realize how, like... In the history of mankind, now that we know what a pizza is, like, that's just gonna last,
right?
Like Veni Vidi Vici. Like, I don't speak Spanish, but hers, you're like, Spanish. That shit hits home, man. It's just, yep. It's whore.
It sucks to be a depressed person.
It does.
Sometimes your pizza's just never right, ever.
And I know my obituary would probably be something along the lines of he was afraid of the robot army being his ultimate downfall. Little did he know that it was the army of cats that he was raising.
And that the robot heart was in himself.
Yeah. Cold and unyielding.
Mm-hmm. It grew two sizes too big that day.
What about you, Palmer? What's your death?
Oh, man, I feel like mine would be something really just, like, mundane. Like, I'd be sitting at my computer playing World of Warcraft and then just, like, fucking, I don't know.
You headbutt your monitor and
die.
Bobby Kotick shows up.
No, I can't.
that's not a death, sir, but you're going to wish you were dead.
I have a mild stroke that causes me to fall out of my window and my head will hit the concrete sidewalk underneath, and it'll just splatter like the Buddha scene in this movie. I feel like that would be...
That's depressing.
You're right.
Now that I talk about this, and this is kind of... His obituary is he died doing the thing he loved the most.
Yeah. Hard stop.
You realize, like, none of us had, like, an elegant death.
I mean, that's the point, though. That's the whole point. If we've survived our potential death, our follow-up's not going to be elegant.
Nothing about this group of people is elegant.
What I'm saying is, like, none of our family members are going to be like, they went peacefully.
No.
You can't have an open casket with anyone.
But here's the thing. In my house, every day there's a reasonable possibility that one of either me or my wife are going to come home to find the other person dead at the bottom of the steps being eaten by our cats. It's a very real possibility.
Why? Because
we have too many cats that run in front of us.
I have a dog and a child and a cat that run in front of me all the time. You're fine.
Yeah, but I think our cats think it's a game.
Oh, yeah.
I think at least one of them is actively trying to kill.
Let's say you only have three steps.
I like to imagine
five.
I have 15 steps.
That when Mary Beth inevitably discovers your half-eaten cat body, your daughter is just cooing like on the ground, playing with a toy, like just nonchalant. Just not giving a fuck.
She'll be chasing one of the cats around, who's also carrying
your
one of like my eyeball in his mouth or something. She's giggling. The cat stole one of her toys.
Dad, giggling. Dad! Yeah. Daddy! Okay. On that note.
Wow. There is your elegance.
I was imagining your child with a crown of fur. And they just made her their queen. And she will feed us.
Yeah, they won't eat her.
She's just riding the cat. Up to Mary Beth. She's just like, Mama! Oh, man. All right.
Just kicks in the Lion King soundtrack. Pink pajamas, penguins on a bottom. Pink pajamas
on a bottom. Oh, man. You can follow us. I guess that wraps it up for the eulogy. Anybody else have anything else to say?
I think that counts fairly as a eulogy.
I'm dead.
You can follow us on social media like Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at Terror Incognito. We're building a Discord community as well. Well, building is a loose term. We are on the ground floor of a Discord community as well. If you're interested in joining, check out the podcast description. I always post the link in there. Stop in. Say hi. Click a link.
Yeah.
Shoot us some stuff you want us to talk about.
Yes.
That's a good way to get our attention, right?
We take recommendations. And Mark Hamill, please join our Discord.
You can follow us individually, too. I'm Palmer at Sternforth.
I'm Alex at A-Looters.
I'm Sam at Sam Heaps.
Ernie, what you got to plug, man?
Hey, everybody. I'm Ernie at ErnieUXD on everything. I've totally snaked that from the world. You can follow Joystick Maverick on all things social on Twitch and YouTube. If it doesn't come up, Joystick Maverick, because Twitter's an a-hole, Joystick Mavericks, or on Twitch, it's official Joystick Maverick, because some guy 9 years ago tried to steal my name, son of a bitch.
Are you sure it wasn't just you, like, drunkenly?
I love words that rhyme, but no, you follow us. We're not great. We get better. That's all that matters.
I feel like that's every podcast.
Yeah, right. Our first episode is literally called Episode 1, the worst, best episode.
So. Yeah, it's true. You can't get any worse. You can't get any better. Well, I guess you can.
But I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Yeah, for sure. It was fun. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back after the holidays with our top 5 2021 films. In the meantime, trying to put down a special episode together for you guys.
We're trying.
In our absence. Wait, don't we have another episode?
No. Yes, that's right. Next week.
Yeah, we're doing Silent Night, Deadly Night 5.
The whole reason.
Sorry, I got my weeks mixed up. Next week we will be back for Silent Night, Deadly Night 5.
Five golden rings.
Thanks for tuning in. Next week, we'll be back with Silent Night, Deadly Night 5, followed by a short break with a special episode we're trying to get done.
Yeah.
And then we'll be back with our top 5 2021 films.
Oh, wow. I'm very underprepared for this.
Well, it's not going to be until like mid-January. You got plenty of time.
And I've watched a ton. I just need to remember what I've watched. That's my problem.
So ill-prepared. I'm so ill-prepared.
It's okay. You have several weeks to start really buckling down. You got to get on my level and start watching four movies in one day.
I cannot.
Other than that, we'll see you all next week. Ernie, thanks again for being on.
Thank you, Ernie.
Appreciate it, guys.
As always, Alex.
Keep it creepy.
Take care, everybody. Catch you later.